The Supplemental Conference Committee will come to order. We, for an agenda tonight, are going to be taking up three items. The first will be the energy section of the Jobs, Economic Development, and Energy Bill. The second we're going to be doing is Public Safety, Judiciary, and the third will be the State Government Finance. I suppose it's possible that we could do some other HHS. That would be the only thing I know of that would be remaining. I guess we'd have to see how much other progress is made this evening on that. But I would say, I guess for those that might be hanging around on HHS, I would say that it's probably unlikely that we would get to that. Maybe we can get you an update on that a little bit later as time goes on. But for now, we're going to do energy. Senator Osbeck, Chair Representative Garofalo, could you please present the energy article?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm going to start with the spreadsheet and just run through really quickly the appropriations in there. First is there's $3 million in fiscal year 18-19 for the Prairie Island Net Zero and Net Zero Emissions Grants with a commitment of $11.5 million through fiscal years 20 and 21. Going over to the back sheet, the back side, if you go to line 59, the 58, this is the energy storage appropriation with regards to the policy language that is in the bill. In addition, we eliminated the appropriation that's set aside for the third-party evaluator law, given the expenditures that are coming out of the fund. There's not going to be RDA distributions for quite some time. The biomass business compensation claims are $40 million. I think there's going to be an amendment later to clean up when that's allocated. And those are the highlights of the finance side of things. Oh, and then last and finally, the per-cask assessment fee is changed from its current allocation at Monticello and Prairie Island to a flat fee, which is reduced to $23 million in the next fiscal year, $28 million the 2 years after that, and then drops to $20 million until the plants close. Those are the highlights of the finance side. Mr. Chairman, did you want us to cover the policy, or do you want us to take up the there's a couple of not technical amendments that Senator Osmick and I have agreed to.
Let's do the policy first.
Okay. So I'm looking at the document labeled RSI-Energy. What you'll see in the first couple of pages are the language involving the changes to the renewable development account in terms of the CASC fee appropriations. Besides that, going beyond that, I fast forward over to page 6, line 15. This is where you can see the language in the House. Representative O'Neill carried it in the Senate. It's passed both the House and the Senate. It's sitting in conference committee now with a technical change that needs to be made to it.
Yes.
Page 7, line 14, is the Prairie Island Net Zero project that I referenced earlier. Next couple of pages here, first of all, the bottom of page 8 is the moving the PUC offices to Virginia, Minnesota, not the state, the city. The demonstration project for energy storage on the next couple of pages. In the House position, section 6 on page 10, this is the RERIC in the House. I don't know who's carrying it in the Senate. Provision to allow for pension reimbursement so that Minnesota Power and other investor-owned utilities conform to what Xcel is getting for reimbursement for that. Fast-forwarding here to page 14. This is the stakeholder group that was carried in the Senate language the House accepted. More energy storage language through page 15 into 16. The bottom of page 17.
We transfer the control closet. That's where we
Mr.
That's the sea leaf stuff.
Yeah, just technical cleanup language with
strike sea leaf puts in renewable development.
Okay, I'll get back to that. There's a problem. On page 17, this is the accelerating time frame for decisions by the PUC from 90 to 30 days was a House position. Some additional cleanup as it's carried forward into 18, page 18. Page 19 is the biomass business compensation grants that were mentioned earlier involving the regarding the Office of Administrative Hearings and the allocation of those funds. That carries you through down to the Compensation Council on page 21. There's more energy storage language on the bottom of page 22. And then on 23, finally, the repealer that's listed, that is the section of the bill that contains an old Xcel wind energy mandate that was met many years ago. It's obsolete language and is just cleaned up. And so that's a brief overview of the policy language, Mr. Chairman.
Senator.
One comment, Mr. Chair, and Representative Garofalo does a fine job explaining it. It's a very good bill. It's actually changing a lot of energy policy, and particularly when it comes to the cap on the CAS, that is going to be very beneficial for all Minnesotans, really. But one thing I wanted to mention is to the biomass payout, that we want to stay on the record that it's the intent that the ALJ award the claims based on amounts appropriated each year proportionally for the 2 years. That is if we continue to ride with the money and split across 2 years. We want to make sure that's on the record so the ALJ understands that that is the legislative intent. Other than that, I'll stand with Representative Garofalo for any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Senator. We do have at least one individual I know of who wants to testify, Commissioner of Commerce Lumen. There you are. Please come forward.
How are you doing? Good to see you again.
Commissioner, welcome back to the Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to the Conference Committee this evening. Again, I'm Jessica Lumen, the Commissioner of the Department of Commerce. Just want to address a few things in this bill. First, just want to say that we are disappointed that the committee did not include the language that would extend the $500,000 grid utility assessment to fund the reliability work that we do at the Department of Commerce. It was in the Senate position, and we were hoping that it would make the conference committee bill. I will note that this is the only item in the governor's supplemental budget for the Department of Commerce this year. The assessment on the utilities funds Commerce's work to avoid power disruptions in the state, including blackouts and sustained service disruptions in the event of disaster or extreme weather events. This work actually helps to keep electric rates lower as well for Minnesota residents and businesses, because we make sure that the federal and regional regulators aren't approving unreasonably high costs. Again, to ensure that the reliability of the state's electric system in the future, I would request that the Commerce Committee include the grid reliability assessment in the bill and remove the sunset for this bill in for this assessment in 26B62 subdivision 3B. Second, the department is concerned about the language related to capping the money that Xcel Energy must transfer from the renewable energy account development account. Currently, as Senator Osmick said, the Xcel must put $500,000 for each dry cask containing spent fuel located at Prairie Island and $350,000 for each dry cask at Monticello. It is reasonable that the amount of nuclear waste, as it increases, that the contribution to the RDA also increases. Ultimately, the bill will make less money available for important renewable energy projects and programs that actually help create cleaner energy jobs and continue to make Minnesota a leader in renewable energy. Third, the department opposes the language in Section 4, Lines 8.30 through 9.1, relocating the Public Utilities Commission office from St. Paul to Virginia, Minnesota. The Commerce Department is required to develop the public record, provide technical resources and energy policy planning, conduct thorough environmental impact analysis, and provide extensive testimony before the commission. This proposal will increase costs to the department and the state, and it will limit our ability to provide effective and efficient services to the public and the PUC. Fourth, the Commerce Department is disappointed in the language in Section 6, Lines 10.8 through 10.17, and remain opposed to the language as written. This is the pension rate-based language. We at the Commerce Department and the administration are absolutely committed to securing the future of pensions for Minnesota workers and to protect consumers they serve. And we share the goal of ensuring that prepaid pension assets are treated uniformly for all utilities. We have tried to work with the proponents of this bill and the advocates and provided a proposal that would allow them to accomplish the goal that they have laid out of being treated the same and also preserving the authority of the PUC. Unfortunately, this bill does not have that language, and we continue to oppose this provision. Finally, we have concerns about the language that's the technical language at 11.18 that's around the solar community solar gardens. We're concerned that this language would create a disincentive to develop the solar gardens in the future because of the way the language is written. Those are our comments and concerns, and again, we have some real opposition to some of the provisions in this bill, but there are other things that are positive for energy development, and we thank you for the opportunity to talk about the bill. Thanks.
Senator Osmek or Representative Garofalo, do you have any questions, comments, or does anyone else on the committee?
Mr. Chairman, I'd just say that the commissioner is my favorite commissioner to work with, so she's a good person. Mm-hmm. Look forward to working with her.
Thank you.
All right, Commissioner. Here we go. High praise, I think.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Commissioner. All right. We have, I know, some amendments. Senator Rosen, should we do some of the amendments first? Okay. Why don't we take, I think there's one. The A-131 amendment, I believe, is a technical amendment brought by Representative Garofalo. Representative Garofalo, I guess you could move it. That is your amendment, right?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I need to move the article first, though.
Okay. All right. Please move the article.
So, Mr. Chairman, I'll move the article, the section of the bill labeled RSI-Energy for approval by the Conference Committee.
All right. Representative Garofalo moves the RSI-Energy article for the conference committee. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. And this is the article. It's 23 pages in length, page 1 to page 23, section 1 through section 21. The first amendment I'll move is the A-131 amendment. Mr. Chairman, what this does, the intent is to only have this section of law apply to the investor-owned utilities. It was requested by stakeholders that we adopt this language to make sure that it conforms with that intent.
Is there discussion to the A-131 amendment? Senator Osmek?
That's good from the Senate side. I certainly approve this as an addition or as a correction to the language.
All right. Any discussion? Senator Rosen?
I was just looking, Mr. Chair. Hold on.
Sure. Any other discussion? See no discussion. All in favor of the A-131 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-131 amendment is adopted. Let's see. What other amendments do we have here?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
I have
Senator Rosen. I'm sorry, Representative Garofalo?
Mr. Chairman, the A-129 amendment.
Okay. Representative Garofalo moves the A-129 amendment.
And Mr. Chairman and members, what this is it allows just some language regarding the administration of the grant to the Prairie Island Indian Community for the zero emissions grant. It deletes some sections of the bill and inserts this language. This has been signed off on by myself and Senator Osmek and is supported by the Prairie Island Indian Community.
Okay. Discussion to the A-129 amendment. Senator Osmek, do you wish to add anything?
Nope, I am perfectly fine with this amendment.
Okay. Senator Rosen?
Nope, looks good.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A-129 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-129 amendment is adopted. Does anyone else have any other amendments? I know there's a couple of others.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that there's an amendment to regarding appropriations that we agreed to cover. I don't have a copy of that amendment in front of me, though. I guess I do.
Senator Mr. Chair.
Go ahead. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A-230 amendment.
Right.
And I believe that will be passed out now.
Okay. Representative Rosen moves the
A-230.
Senator.
Senator.
No, I'm
Chair
doing
Rosen.
It. Chair. Senator Chair Rosen. Senator Rosen moves the A-230 amendment, and that's being distributed. Senator Rosen, while it's being distributed, could you explain the amendment?
Okay. Mr. Chair, we also have a new spreadsheet that will show what will happen with this, with the RDA payout to the biomass business compensation account. Currently, the bill has it spread out over 2 years. This is found on page 22, line 2 of the RSI Energy. Amendment, and we are, instead of spreading it over 2 years, we are going to do one lump sum of $40 million in year 2019. It still leaves a balance of $4,053,000 in year 2019, goes down to $34,000 in FY20, which would be the same as what would have been with this amendment, the original amendment. And then it ramps back up to an acceptable amount. But this I feel strongly about because of that these people are going to have to go in front of an administrative law judge twice. There's going to be proceedings. I think the House language for the administrative law judge, the ALJ process was very acceptable. And this is a compromise that I believe the people that have been affected by this biomass will be beneficial just to get this out, get it over and done with.
Senator Rosen had spoken to me about this previously, and I do think some of the things that she's saying make some sense. Is there a discussion to the A230 amendment? Representative Garofalo?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, 2 points. One is that when I show up to conference committee and I see the new spreadsheet with the change already made, I'm smart enough to know that I should accept the amendment. Second of all, is I do think that there is someone who wants to publicly testify on this amendment, if you could allow that at this time.
Oh, absolutely. If we have someone that would like to come forward and testify on it. Welcome to the committee. Can you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. John Reich with Winthrop & Weinstein Law Firm in Minneapolis. We represent Prion Indian Community. And I had briefly discussed this with Senator Rosen before the committee, but have since been frantically communicating with the folks at Prairie Island. And this is a departure from the deal that we had all agreed to yesterday, which I think was the spreadsheet that members had seen before them at the beginning of the hearing. And the Tribal Council has not had an opportunity to review or weigh in on this new proposal. And so, therefore, Mr. Chair and members, at this point, I can't say that Prairie Island supports the measure without the Tribal Council having had the opportunity to weigh in on it and give us direction.
Senator Osmick, and let me say, members, that there are two spreadsheets here, one that is without the effect of this amendment, and then one I also saw when I got here that had the effect of the amendment. But Senator Osbeck, if you could comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It should be noted that in previous Senate spreadsheets and offers that we made with Representative Garofalo, it was front-loaded with $40 million in the front. And I respect the tribe's ability to look at where we are going with this. This isn't something that we came out of completely nowhere with. But that being said, I respect the fact that they haven't had a chance to look at this new revised opportunity. Keep in mind that the money is only shifting from year two to year one. Basically, it just front loads the money. When I negotiated with Representative Garofalo, it was determined to go 25-15, so this is not something that I originally had included in the conversation, but was in our offers going back into last week. So it's not something completely foreign.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Reich, that is disappointing to hear. I have both spreadsheets right in front of me, and we talked, yes, before. This has been the Senate position for a very long time. It's been through the committee. We've discussed this. And obviously there was a very generous negotiations for the Prairie Island that I think in the front end was compromised by Senator Osmick and Representative Garofalo. Nothing has changed for Prairie Island in this amendment. The deal is the deal with there, so I'm disappointed that that you're up front and saying that you can't support this, because this was always this $40 million was always part of the negotiations. So I'm just going to say that for the record. And if I could have Mr. Mom just verify this spreadsheet, please.
Mr. Mom, and then I'll recognize Mr. Wright.
Madam Chair, yes, this spreadsheet is a document that House Fiscal Staff and myself have worked with to project various scenarios with the renewable development account.
All right. Mr. Wright.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Rosen, I appreciate your comments. I think at this point it's a function of not having been able to communicate with the council, and we will certainly do that at our earliest convenience and be in touch with you and other members with regard to this issue.
Mr. Wright, can I ask, had the council previously approved any of the Senate offers that had the $40 million all in 1 year?
Mr. Chair, they had not.
Okay. Had they approved any of the offers from the Senate?
Mr. Chair, they had approved the spreadsheet that sits before you as committee started today with the payments at 25 and 15 in year 1 and 2.
Okay, so I guess it's Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I just was curious if Senator Osmek could tell us how long the $40 million language has been moving in the legislature.
Senator Osmek.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Benson, the $40 million has been an integral part of all of the offers, has always been there, has been, I've stood firm on the $40 million. I guess I'm a little surprised that the Prairie Island tribe says that they have not seen the front-loaded 40, because previous spreadsheets, which included a payout to the Prairie Island community of $5 million first year, $7.5 million, $7.5 million, $7.5 million, and $5 million, has been, I know, seen by the Prairie Island tribe, because that was a previous iteration of the Senate offer, and the $40 million was front-loaded in the first year on that spreadsheet. So I guess I'm a little confused that the Prairie Island community hasn't seen that spreadsheet, because that was an offer that we made as recently, if memory goes back to Friday or Thursday of last week.
Mr. Wright.
Mr. Chair, I would like to be very clear. We have not had an opportunity to visit with the Tribal Council on this latest proposal. Because of that, I can't indicate support for it at this particular moment in time. Mm-hmm. I should also note that the other provisions in the bill, the cap on casks for payments made into the renewable development account, have been an issue that the tribe has been concerned about for years, mostly because the waste sits 600 yards from the Prairie Island Indian community, and they shoulder the burden of that waste sitting 600 yards from their community. We have also weighed in the committees via letter and written testimony with regards to the biomass funds, and have stated that we believe that general funds should have been used to fund the biomass payments, as the RDA, its original mission had been to develop renewable energy. All of that said, Mr. Chair and members, we had come to an agreement on those three issues as a global deal yesterday. And again, I want to be clear, we haven't had a chance to communicate with the Tribal Council on it yet. And for that reason, I can't indicate support at this particular point in time.
Well, Mr. Wright, I do want to thank you for all the work that you've done on behalf of the council, and I want to thank the Prairie Island community for their willingness to be involved in these negotiations. I guess it sounds fair to say that at this point you can't speak in either support or opposition for this. So while you're not speaking in support, you're not speaking in opposition either. I guess I would, we would adopt the article tonight. I guess I think that, we haven't adopted the entire bill. The conference committee will again be meeting tomorrow. If there is some incredible opposition that comes forward the reason I'd have a hard time understanding, given the $40 million number has been out there a number of times, I guess we could talk about it further. But Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't think I'm not airing any dirty laundry here, but obviously the House and Senate had radically different opinions about how to work with the RDA, and this was a compromise position that came up. I do want to take just a minute to talk about the Prairie Island Zero Emissions Grant. This is going to be a nation-leading program to allow the Prairie Island Indian community to have zero emissions in terms of electricity, possibly vehicles, their commercial operations. This is really a nation-leading opportunity to demonstrate responsible environmental stewardship using the resources that are coming from casks that, as the testifier mentioned, are within eyesight of residences in the Prairie Island Indian community. So it's something that I'm very excited about, and I know we don't want to have Senator Osmick and I reopen the disputes we had on this matter. But I think it's safe to say that obviously, as you know, in any compromise, there's differences of opinion, and I think we'll just leave it at that and look forward to the conversation.
Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One additional comment. As much as I was a staunch supporter of the $40 million for the biomass project, I was also a very staunch and ardent supporter of having the Prairie Island community get $40 million and not compromise on their funding also. So while the two issues are not necessarily connected, I have fought strenuously to make sure that both of them are treated equally. So I hope our friends at Prairie Island understand that, is that this is, we're not trying to change necessarily the rules, but the biomass, and I think the direction Senator Rosen is going is that the biomass has a little bit of a different tweak to it, in that we have businesses, when we begin to power down the Benson facility, that are going to be immediately impacted, and we need to stabilize them. That's the reason for the timing on it, and that's why having it up front may be more essential. However, during negotiations with Representative Garofalo, I did concede to 25-15, but I will go whichever way the committee goes, because as long as you stay at 40, I'm happy.
Is there any other discussion of the A-230 amendment? Senator Rosen, or Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I guess because the plant in Benson is closing down immediately or very soon, is it already closed?
No. Senator Osmick.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, it looks like they're going to begin looking at power down June or July. It could be as late as August or September, but it could be as early as June, but we don't have a firm grasp. Our friends at Excel are here, but I don't think they can even answer that question.
It's all right. The point
Senator
being,
Benson.
The biomass issue seems to be more emergent, especially for those businesses that actually built a business model based on a promise. And so I think there's some reasonableness in front-loading this money so that they know what they're working with and they don't have to piece it out and have a protracted process. So if they get settled, they're just done.
Any other discussion? Well, as I previously mentioned, I'd urge members of the House to support the A-230 amendment. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the A-230 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-230 amendment is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move, I am working on the jobs appropriation 18, and the article would be the jobs and economic growth, the appropriations, section 1. And then I'd also like to do section 2, which is the Department of Employment and Economic Development, which goes to page 3 at this moment. And then we can go some more together. With that, I'd like to move section 1 and section 2, please.
All right. Senator Rosen moves section 1 and section 2 of the Jobs and Economic Growth article. That's page 1, line 1 through page 3, line 18. Is there any discussion?
Okay. Mr. Chairman?
See no discussion. All
Chairman,
in favor
Chairman,
say – oh, wait a minute. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, how are sections 1 and 2 different than the existing language?
Okay,
aren't they – didn't we already adopt this?
Senator Rosen is saying that we have adopted that previously, yes.
Okay. So, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move sections 3, which is the energy storage system cost-benefit study. And that's, you can find in the energy section of R2. And then I'd also like to move section 8, which is canceling the $50,000 per year appropriation from RDA for costs associated to third-party evaluations, and that's found in the energy section of R5.
Okay. Senator Rosen moves Section 3 and Section 8 of the Job Appropriation 18 article. Representative Garofalo or Senator Osnick, any comments?
Mr. Chairman, the House supports that amendment.
Senator Osnick?
And the Senate also does.
Any discussion? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of Sections 3 and 8 of the Jobs and Economic Growth Appropriations article, signify saying aye.
Aye.
Yes. Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen motion is adopted.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Chair, I'm on the RSI Energy Amendment. And I'd like to move Sections 1, 2, and 3. The Renewable Development Account Modification can be found on R1 through 5. Section 2 is the Solar Rewards Program. That can be found on R5 through 6. And I would like to move the Sections 3, which awards $45 million from the RDA to the Prairie Island Indian Community over 6 years, and that's found on R7.
Okay. Senator Rosen moves Sections 1, 2, and 3 off the RSI Energy article dated May 16th, and that would be page 1, line 1, through page 8, line 29. Discussion. Senator Osnick, Representative Garofalo, any comments?
I support the section. I approve of it.
And Mr. Chairman,
Senator Garofalo,
I was under the impression that we adopted the amendments to this article already.
We adopted amendments to the article, but we actually haven't adopted the article itself.
Okay, thank you. So, yes, we support that.
All right. Then all in favor of Sections 1, 2, and 3, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Sections 1, 2, and 3 are adopted.
And, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Sections 5, found on R11, Section 6, found on R11, Section 7, found, that's actually new language, so I'm going to just move Sections 5, 6, Sections 8, 9, and 10. And that's found from R11 through R21.
Mr. Chairman?
Let me repeat the motion. Senator Rosen moves Sections 5, 6, 8, 9, and 10 of the RSI Energy article. So that starts at page 9, line 1. And continues through page 10, line 17, and then starts at page 12, line 12, and continues through page 16, line 5. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, why are we not adopting Section 7?
Thank you.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo. I think just on the new provisions, I was going to ask the Chair if we could have a discussion on the community solar garden language that's new, and also on Section 12, which is the you mentioned a little bit, Representative Garofalo, on the Prairie Island Net Zero Project. So I wanted to have a more thorough discussion on that, please.
And Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo,
I just want to make sure I'm being transparent with the committee that there's lots of new language in this bill besides what's categorized as new on the source here. So just because something is similar doesn't mean it isn't also new. I just want to make sure that you're not under the impression that this is the only new language in this bill. As part of the compromise, new language was introduced. So I just want to make sure I'm being transparent with you.
Representative Garofalo, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Representative Garofalo. I understand that, okay, but I do want to have a discussion over those two provisions.
Thank you.
Okay, other discussions of the Rosen motion to adopt Sections 5, 6, 8, 9, and 10. Senator Osnick?
I'm supportive of all those sections.
Okay. Seeing no discussion, all in favor of Sections 5, 6, 8, 9, and 10, the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Those sections are adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I could then, could we ask for a little more detail on Section 7 and Section 12?
I can do 7. Mr. Chair.
Let's see, Senator Osbeck and Representative Garofalo, do you want to provide that or staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regarding Section 7, regarding community solar gardens, right now, in looking at the solar garden statute language, when we put this into play a few sessions ago, there was a component of the community solar garden standard that the Public Utilities Commission is using for, I don't believe, the purpose that we legislatively intended it to. The word financing on page 11, line 18, is being stricken. The reason for that is that when you were looking at community solar garden rates that Xcel ratepayers have to pay, they are being charged approximately 3 times market rate for community solar garden energy that is generated. I don't believe it's a legislative intent by the legislature to skew that far and far to create that more that expensive of energy. It also is true that that can have a deleterious effect on solar energy that is utility grade, that is a third the cost, because it is pushing out the utility grade, which is still expensive, but certainly not 3 times market rate. So the reason for that is to delete that is to provide some level of change to the Public Utilities Commission so that the compensation the solar gardens are getting is within some level of reason, not 3 times market rate.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen. Just to be clear, I participated in the Energy Conference Committee in 2013 that adopted this language. At no point during that process was it discussed that this was an incentive program. The Public Utilities Commission took it on their own accord to determine that that word on page 11, line 18, was all the authority they needed to create an uncapped incentive program that can allow for an unlimited amount of community solar in the state of Minnesota. I participated in that conference committee. At no point was it ever discussed as an incentive. This is a check and a balance that Senator Mott Osmick and I have agreed to remind the Public Utilities Commission that their job is to interpret the laws, not to make them.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Garofalo, aren't you glad you had a chance to explain this section? That's exactly what I was trying to get, because I actually agree with you. So I wanted to have this opportunity for you to explain this.
Mr. Chairman.
I'm not threatening this section.
Mr. Chairman.
It's the $40 million up front, Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Rosen, you say it as if you're so surprised that you agree with me, like I'm some sort of... I'm just a reasonable network guy from Farmington.
These little cakes. I'll get you sweetened up here.
Thank you. And then, Mr. Chairman and
Representative Garofalo,
Senator Rosen, do you want me to elaborate on Section 12 right now before we adopt them as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I would appreciate Section 12 if you could talk about the Prairie Island Net Zero Project more in detail, please.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chairman and Senator Rosen, so this is the language, and it was amended, I believe, as one of the amendments, correct?
Yes.
No? Let me just double check. The A-129 amendment is the one that amended this, right? No, it didn't. It's page 16. Okay. This is just regarding the administration of it, that Section 12...
No, Representative
Mr. Chair.
I don't believe that we amended this language.
Yeah, we did not. Now, Mr. Eloff can elaborate on this language.
Maybe I can, Mr. Chair.
Eloff.
Bob Eloff from House Research. This section was actually inserted at the suggestion of the reviser last night. As you know, the Prairie Island language indicates that unspent money in in the Made in Minnesota account, he transferred to Prairie Island, and the reviser felt that putting the language in the Made in Minnesota section clarified that. That's what this section does.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Garofalo, let me get this straight. If there's any extra money in the Made in Minnesota account, it's going to be transferred to the Prairie Island Net Zero Project?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm trying to, Mr. Chairman and Senator, I'm trying to find the second part of that language. Mr. Zempel or Mr. Eloff, you can just point me to the page and line so I can point out how this interacts with it.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
There it is. Okay,
it's
all right.
On,
my apologies.
Page 17, section 16.
Yep. Okay, so.
Mr.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen, my apologies. I just needed to catch up there. So as part of the compromise and the negotiations, you'll notice that the payments to the Prairie Island Indian Community for the zero emissions plan were deferred out over a longer time frame than originally proposed. As part of the compromise that Senator Nosmick and I reached, what we're doing is we're saying that if the Made in Minnesota incentive grants come in short of their forecasted amount, that amount would then be captured and included into the Prairie Island appropriation that's made in the spreadsheet. So we would add that amount of money so that if the resources are available, we can automatically accelerate those payments instead of waiting until 2023. I think it's the last year of the payment.
Further discussion? Senator Rosen?
Well, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Garofalo. I will just say, I appreciate both you and Senator Osmick's negotiations here. And I think I'm fine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other discussion? Senator Rosen, do you have a motion you'd like to make?
I think I had a move. Motion, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Section 7, found on page 10 through 12. I'd like to move Section 11, found on page 16, R21, which is requires the investor-owned utilities to include an assessment of energy storage systems. And I'd like to move Section 12, found on page 16, which is the appropriation for the Prairie Island Net Zero Project transferred from the Made in Minnesota program. And then I'd like to move Section 13, which is the contact information database, found on page 17 and R26 of the side-by-side. And then I'd like to move sections 14, which is the 30-day amount for the PUC to extend a decision on siting and routing application for a large electric generating facility. That's found on page 17 also, and R27 of the side-by-side.
Senator Rosen, did you say section 15 too?
I did not.
Oh, okay. All right. Senator Rosen moves sections 7, 11, 12, 13, and 14. Discussion to that motion.
Mr. Chairman and
Representative Garofalo.
Is there a reason why we're not adopting sections 8, 9, and 10?
We did.
We did already.
Never mind.
I don't think
Senator Rosen moves sections.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Senator Rosen.
Representative Garofalo, you're awfully suspicious.
No, no, I want to leave you alone. I want to be bothering you. You got other work to do. So we did adopt 8, 9, and 10?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, Senator Rosen moves Section 7, 11, 12, 13, and 14. Discussion to the Senator's motion. Senator Osmick or Representative Garofalo, any comments?
I support all those sections.
Representative Garofalo?
The House supports it as well.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of Senator Rosen's motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator
Chair.
Senator Rosen.
I would like to move Sections 15, which is the 30-day for the PUC to extend a decision I probably should have done that before. And Section 1617, which is the program administration of the Made in Minnesota solar thermal rebates. And 17 is the transfer for the, from the RDA for the unexpended grant funds. I'd also like to move Sections 18 and 19, which 18 is the biomass business compensation found on page 19 through 20. And Section 19 is the biomass business compensation account found on page 21 through 22. And then I would like to move Section 20, which is the report on the cost-benefit analysis of the energy storage systems. And then, of course, we have a repealer. I'd like to move Section 21.
Senator Rosen.
And if we could have a, staff say what the repealer is, please.
Okay. Senator Rosen moves Sections 15 through 21. Could we have staff explain the repealer in Section 21?
Mr. Chair, the repealer in Section 21 repeals Xcel Energy's wind mandate, which has been satisfied a long time ago.
Discussion to the Rosen motion. Senator Osbeck, Representative Garofalo.
Senate supports all those positions.
Representative Garofalo.
The House supports those positions as well.
Any other discussion? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would just like to say congratulations, Xcel, for reaching their mandate. Good job. They've done a great job.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt Sections 15 through 21, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Section 15 through 21 are adopted. Senator Rosen, we should maybe turn to the spreadsheet then.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move spreadsheet that is date 5/15/2018 at 10:02 p.m. I would like to move this spreadsheet, please, Mr. Chair.
I'm sure I got the right spreadsheet.
No. 10:02 in the corner.
Okay. Oh, I've got one that's a little bit deleted.
It's a fresh one.
Okay. I'm wondering if we can talk to staff. I've got a spreadsheet up here that's dated May 16, 2018, and Senator Rosen was working off of the May 15th one.
Okay. That's a problem.
May 15th,
too. Can I call on either Mr. Marks or Mr. Nauman? Mr. Zempel.
Mr. Chair, members, we should be working off the one dated for the 16th.
All right.
Mr. Chair, does everyone have this one? I just received it.
Okay, we're working off of the May 16, 2018 spreadsheet, 10:22 a.m. Does everyone have that spreadsheet?
It's a long one.
All right, we're going to make sure that everyone has a copy of that spreadsheet.
Maybe Alan.
Yeah, we have one.
We have one here. You're back.
Because I know you're going to want to keep that for posterity. While we're getting those spreadsheets, Senator Rosen, let's have you move the spreadsheet. We'll see if there's discussion on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the spreadsheet that is dated 5/16/2018 at 10:22 a.m.
All right. And is there discussion to that spreadsheet?
Madam, Mr. Chair.
Representative Garofalo?
We don't have that spreadsheet here.
All right. Well, we are getting them. Okay. While we're waiting, maybe staff can explain the difference between the two spreadsheets. Mr. Nauman or other staff? Mr. Zempel.
Mr. Chair, the only difference between those two spreadsheets is a formula error on line 74 that incorrectly subtotals the house position for the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority.
All right.
Everything else should be the same.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Mr. Chair, just from what I'm hearing here, it sounds like both spreadsheets are the same for the conference position.
All right. Okay. So, yeah, it sounds like it's just as Mr. Nauman said, both spreadsheets are the same for the conference position. It was just earlier position of, I think he said, the house that was off. So. Did I say?
Yeah, you said that.
Okay. Well, in the House article. So is there discussion to the
same thing
to the spreadsheet? All right, Senator Rosen, you made the motion to adopt the spreadsheet.
I renew my motion to move the spreadsheet that's dated 5/16/2018 at 10:22 a.m.
All right, see no discussion. All in favor of adopting the spreadsheet, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The spreadsheet is adopted. Senator Rosen, do you want to adopt perhaps the renewable development account spreadsheet?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, we are working off the spreadsheet for the renewable development account for 5/16/2018 at 4:36 p.m. I'd like to make that motion, please.
Okay, and Senator Rosen moves the spreadsheet for the renewable development account, which is the May 16th, 4:36 p.m. spreadsheet. And I think, would you be willing to incorporate also that staff make any other technical corrections are necessary to adopt the spreadsheet and the other articles?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, is there any discussion to the Rosen motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen motion is adopted. Members, I'm not sure if there's any other language or spreadsheets to be adopted for the energy article. Is there anything else?
Mr. Chairman,
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Rosen, I think you forgot to move section 4 of the conference report. Was that an accident or was that a defined omission?
Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Rosen?
You were very observant. Thank you, Representative Garofalo. That was a joint decision by the chairs up here.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I truly do regret shifting the $40 million in biomass for the first year, don't I?
Representative Garofalo, Senator Rosen is making the motions tonight, and she just didn't want to make that one.
I'm sure she will tomorrow.
And I agreed with her.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Rosen.
All right. Okay, thank you, Senator Osbeck, Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right, next, if we can have public safety come forward. Reconvene the meeting. We have the public safety bill before us. Senator Limmer, Representative Johnson, welcome to the committee. Senator Limmer, you're a member of the committee, but I will welcome Representative Johnson. Could you present the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I think what we'll do is start with the spreadsheet first, and I would like to have Mr. Turner review the spreadsheet on our budget.
All right, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at the spreadsheet dated May 16th, timestamp 10:03. First provision is on line 21, guardian ad litem board, additional staffing, caseload reduction. Have an appropriation of $2,940,000 in fiscal year 19 with tails of $1,871,000 each year. Then we move down to line 38, We have a House provision, task force for missing and murdered indigenous women. Fiscal year 19, appropriation of $48,000. And a fiscal year 20, appropriation of $45,000. Then on lines 40 and 41, two lines that are two lines for one provision in the bill. Number 40 cancels an appropriation for a 2012 federal disaster. Line 41 credits it to the general fund. And then on the other side, on the other, on page 2, line 95, transfers that money to the disaster contingency account. When we move to line 42, we have a BCA appropriation, two scientists and supplies of $275,000. That's ongoing. Line 46, ignition interlock, $100,000 from the Driver and Vehicle Services Fund for administering the program. Page 2, line 58. Defender Healthcare contract for corrections, $6.6 million. Then we have a number of provisions that have tails, criminal provisions. Line 62, DWI expansion. Line 67, child pornography provisions. 71, criminal sexual conduct, person of authority expansion. Line 72, crim sex, person in custody. And line 73, crim sex, marital defense elimination. Then we move on to human services, line 81, $12,000 for a statute of limitations, non-paternity video. Line 90, we have a post-board deficiency, $125,000 general fund transfer to make up that deficiency. Then, as mentioned, line 95, a transfer from the federal disaster from 2012 back into the disaster assistance contingency account. And finally, line 96, we extend the core technology fee for 5 years, and that brings in $830,000 each year. That's a fee on court motions and filings, $2, and it's distributed to projects okayed by the Judicial Council. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the spreadsheet.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. Senator Limmer or Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, members, I'm going to go over Article 2 with the items in that. First of all, we have some updates to the non-paternity issues. We also have the court technology fee exoneration issues. There was a court ruling that dealt with that. The amelioration doctrine. And also, we found out we had some issues with location tracking warrants, and this provision takes care of the location tracking warrant issues. Do you have any questions on those?
Any questions or discussion on Article 2? Seeing none, please proceed. Senator Limmer?
Yeah, on Article 3, Mr. Chair. Mr. Turner already mentioned the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women Task Force. That's found in Article 3, Section 11. Law enforcement firearms issues were addressed, referring to police officers that were in good standing with the police department, that the agency cannot take their firearms in any circumstances unless there's due cause or it's a employment issue. There was a technical reviser instruction in Article 4, Section 25. We also had a provision on enhanced penalty for certain driving without a driver license crimes. That's in the event that a person has repeatedly is repeatedly driving with a revoked or canceled driver license and gets in an accident. We have an enhanced penalty for that up from a misdemeanor to a gross misdemeanor. There is the provision of critical infrastructure that I believe was voted on separately, standalone bill in both chambers, which is included. And there's a transfer to community justice reinvestment account. It's more of a technical matter than anything else.
Before we go on to Article 4, we at this point have only passed out Articles 1, 2, and 3, so we don't have those in front of us. I think maybe now would be an appropriate time to see if there's anyone in the audience who would want to testify. Are there any commissioners or anyone here? Yes, sir. Commissioner Roy, welcome to the conference committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom Roy, Commissioner of Corrections. We appreciate the observance of the medical contract and the $6.6 million that will be afforded to us to provide constitutionally required medical care. We are concerned about the absence of the governor's proposal for our population per diem at $7.864 million. And committee, the concern that we have is that the drug crisis has thrown a wrench into the prediction world for us. The phenomenal growth of drug cases coming through the courts and subsequently into prison is creating a problem for us. And as you know, we are contracting with local jails to provide overflow capacity for us. We have made significant strides and developed strategies to reduce population, but the drug crisis is creating a problem for us, and I hope if there's any opportunity for the committee to continue to work on our that particular line item, it would be appreciated. I'm not going to talk about the opioid request that was in our supplemental request because I think you folks are dealing with that with the governor, and our $710,000 was a modest request to be a part of that initiative. So thank you for the time. I appreciate your support, and I wish I was sitting here talking about a very compelling, exciting initiative, but I would entitle our request as business as usual. We, day in and day out, do this work, and we don't control necessarily the people that come to us, nor do we control the conditions that they come to us in. And so I hope there's confidence in the work we do and some confidence that the numbers we have proposed are real and they aren't exaggerated. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Roy. Any questions for Commissioner Roy? Thank you, Commissioner. Does anyone else wish to testify? All right, I don't see anyone else at this time. I see that Articles 4, 5, and 6 have been passed out, so maybe we should continue to proceed through those articles. Representative Johnson, are you next?
Well, Mr. Chair, members, in Article 4 is sex offenders. We have in Section 4 is a family reunification. Section 257911, sections 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 deal with recent position of authority involving students in the schools, increasing the time, so a person can't quit their job or quit being a volunteer on one day and have a relationship with a student on the next day, and so it keeps that position of authority going. Also, dealing with law enforcement officers, with somebody in position in custody. Section 13 deals with the exemption on clothing covering the buttocks in the current statutes. Section 29 deals with marital rape exemption, repealing that. Section 1 deals with stays of adjudication and judges requiring the judges in stays of adjudication on crim sex cases to justify the departure. And also I have Section 14 deals with surreptitious intrusion, which is a new felony. Also have some expansion on the sentences for child pornography.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, just a comment. In Article 4, on page 11, beginning at line 1, there is a clause which makes it a crime for a peace officer to engage in a sex crime with someone who is essentially in custody. I'd just like to go on record indicating that I disagree with that provision. I have no intention of coming forward with any kind of an amendment, but it would be my feeling that, number one, it's unnecessary. I think that's probably already illegal. And number two, just in general, I think that law enforcement is having a difficult enough time in protecting us without moving forward with this kind of language in a bill, and I just want to express my opposition to it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Other discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Seeing none, Senator Limmer.
Mr. Chair, just to address Senator Newman's concern, this provision is similar to other occupations where there is a position of trust or authority. We also include in Minnesota law right now, we make reference, the very same reference to clergy, psychologists, massage therapists, prison guards, and other similar professions where there's a position of trust and authority. So it was not our desire to single out law enforcement, but to add under the concept of a position of trust or a position of authority. And we thought that it was appropriate at this time.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Newman.
I acknowledge what Senator Limmer has indicated in his position, but very clearly the language says the actor is a peace officer. Also has a provision in there that consent is not a defense. I sometimes feel like we are singling out law enforcement when it's not necessary. And they, of course, are the folks that we turn to protect us on a daily basis. I respect Senator Limmer's position on this, but I nevertheless disagree with calling out law enforcement in general with respect to this particular clause.
Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Article 5 is in regard to the Predatory Offender Registration Program. Little background. In the fall of 2017, the Supreme Court in Minnesota decided a case on the mental state required for violation of the Predatory Offender Registration Law. This language is included to address the court case so that the law will continue to work the legislature the way the legislature intended. We added additional provisions requested by the BCA to update the law and to require DNA samples from people required to register under the predatory offender registration. And that's included in this bill.
Any questions for Senator Lemmer? Representative Johnson, Article 6.
Members, Article 6 deals with DWIs. We have a provision dealing with being able to expand the out-of-state DWIs for enhanced penalties. We also expanded the ignition interlock system, so a person with multiple DWIs after their second DWI would be required to go on the ignition interlock program before they could obtain a driver's license again. Instead of sitting and waiting out their time before they can get a driver's license, they now have, if they have multiple DWIs, they have to participate in the program. And we're finding that this interlock program actually does work. We also have, in Clause 7, one of the current concerns people had that had the interlock system is when they malfunction, the companies have had issues paying for the cost for the repair. This Section 7 requires if the malfunction causing the car to not operate properly is in the interlock device, the company has to pay for the repair and the towing to get the vehicle running again.
Any questions for Representative Johnson? Seeing none, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have actually...
are there amendments? Oh, yeah, we need to amend this
first. Mr. Chair, I have Article 1. I'd like to make a motion to move, please. It's the KLL 18-12.
Senator Rosen moves Article 1, and that would be page 1, line 1 through page 3, line 2. And that is sections 1 through 7. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I would like to make an oral amendment on section 2 of this Article 1.
Senator Rosen, can you state the oral amendment?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I would like to turn over to Mr. Nauman.
Mr. Nauman.
So, Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, it's my understanding the intent with this oral amendment would be to extend the availability of the appropriation, the $2.940 million, and make it available until the end of the tails. So the amendment would read, on line 1.17, after the period, insert, the appropriation in this section is available until June 30th, 2021. Period.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, I didn't hear the last part. Available until when?
Mr. Nauman, could you repeat the amendment?
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, I'll just read the entire sentence again. On line 1.17, after the period, insert, the appropriation in this section is available until June 30th, 2021. Thank
you. All right. Senator Rosen moves that oral amendment. And let me just say that I had talked to Senator Rosen about this, and I think there's a legitimate concern here that we have $2.9 million appropriated in 2019, but roughly $1 million less each year in the tails. And I would have some concern, as I think Senator Rosen does, that otherwise we would be potentially in a situation where we'd have to lay off a bunch of people, and this would allow the Guardian Ad Litem program to better manage their personnel so that they're not faced with laying off people. Senator Newman or Representative Johnson, any comments?
Did you mean Senator Lemmer?
Did I say Senator? I'm sorry, Senator Lemmer. I am so sorry, Senator Lemmer. Senator Lemmer.
I don't know who's more insulted, Senator Newman or me. But getting back to
I'm an equal opportunity insulter this evening.
I'm in favor of the amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Lemmer. Representative Johnson?
Mr. Chair, I'm also in favor of this. This would make it with the number of new guardian ad litems, if you're better up for training and everything, I think that would work better.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor of the Rosen oral amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The oral amendment is adopted. And Senator Rosen, we haven't adopted the full article yet. Is there discussion to the full article as amended? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of Article 1, Sections 1 through 7 as amended, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. That is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move Article 2. We're working off the amendment KLL 18-10. It's the courts. Representative Johnson and Senator Limmer did a very good job explaining what that was, but it's Section 1 through Section 17 for the courts.
Senator Rosen moves the KLL 18-10 language, Article 2, the courts, Sections 1 through 17. And is there discussion to the Rosen motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen motion is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move Article 3. We're working off the KLL 18-11. It is the article for public safety, corrections, and general crime. And again, once again, the chairs both did a very good job of describing what sections are in this. It's Section 1 through 14.
Senator
Rosen. And, Mr. Chair, there is a repealer at the very end.
All right. Senator Rosen moves the KLL 18-11 language, Article 3, Sections 1 through 14. And I wonder if staff could explain the repealer. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair and members, Ben Johnson from House Research. This repealer repeals Section 401.13. This is a companion to Section 4 of the bill, which deals with the amount of compensation that the commissioner can charge counties for per diem costs for juveniles. At the moment, counties that are part of the Community Corrections Act can be charged up to 100% of that cost, and other counties can only be charged up to 65%. This repeals the provision that would allow Community Corrections Act counties to be charged 100%, so all counties would be treated equally.
Thank you. Any discussion to Article 3? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt Article 3, Sections 1 through 14, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen amendment, or the Rosen language, is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are working on Article 4. It's KLL 18-09, the sex offender article. Again, the chairs did a very good job of explaining what's in there. It goes from Section 1 through 18, and there is a repealer at the very end.
Senator Rosen moves the KLL 18-09 language, Sections 1 through 18. Could staff explain the repealer? Yes, Mr. Deeble.
Mr. Chair and members, the repealer is related to the marital rape exception that Representative Johnson mentioned in his overview of Article 4.
Thank you. Is there any discussion to the Rosen motion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen motion is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Article 5. It's the KLL 18-07, and it deals with the predatory offenders.
Senator Rosen moves the KLL 18-07 language, Article 5, related to predatory offenders. And that is Sections 1 through 10. Is there any discussion?
Well, Mr. Chair, I do
have Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer, Representative Johnson is my language in here.
Senator Lemmer.
We have, Mr. Chair, we have some of the language in here. No, it's it. It's completely in here.
Thank you, Senator Lemmer. Thank you, Mr. Representative Johnson.
Other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt the KLL 18-07 language, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. The language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Article 6. It's the KLL 18-08, the DWI article, and it's Section 1 through Section 6.
Senator Rosen moves the KLL 18-08 language, Article 6, DWI, Sections 1 through 6. Any discussion? See no discussion. All in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen language is adopted. Senator Rosen, should we move the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair, I would like to move the spreadsheet dated 5/16/2018 at 10:03 a.m., and I would like to permit staff to make technical changes accordingly.
Senator Rosen moves the spreadsheet for public safety dated 5/16/2018, 10:03 a.m., and that staff make technical corrections as necessary. Is there a discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The spreadsheet is adopted, and staff are instructed to make corrections as necessary. Senator Lemmer, Representative Johnson, thank you for your work. Any last comments?
I have none, Mr. Chair.
I have none either.
All right. Thank you very much. The next item will be state government finance. And we're going to take a short recess while that material gets passed out. We are in temporary recess, just a couple minutes. I'm going to reconvene the Supplemental Conference Committee. We are now going to be taking up the state government finance portion of the supplemental bill. We have our conference member, Senator Kiffmeyer, and Representative Sarah Anderson. Would the two of you present this portion of the bill?
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. And I believe we'll go with the spreadsheet first and the House or Senate, whichever they have agreed to, can go ahead and walk through the spreadsheet.
Okay. Should we, Ms. Roberts, do you want to go through the spreadsheet?
Mr. Chair and members, you have actually two spreadsheets in front of you. The larger one is the format that you're used to looking at that has all of the positions coming into conference. But just for ease and quickness, there's a shorter spreadsheet that just has what's in the agreement, and I'll go over that quickly.
Yes, let's use the shorter one-page spreadsheet that's got the conference agreement on it. And if you can, please speak into the microphone, Ms. Roberts.
Mr. Chair, members, the first item in the conference agreement is $90,000 in one-time funding to the Office of the Reviser to restore the rent reduction that was made in last session's bill. The next item, and you'll see this two places on the spreadsheet, is the redirection of the county state aid from MMB to the Legislative Budget Office. This is $207,000 per year beginning in fiscal year 2020. The next on line 11 is the appropriation from the Help America Vote Act for $1.5 million. It's a special revenue fund. On line 14, you'll see a one-time reduction to the Office of the State Auditor of $269,000. The next items are under Minnesota Management and Budget, two items that total $269,000. The first is $140,000 one-time to reimburse litigation costs for Wright and Becker counties. And the second is one-time funding of $129,000 in fiscal year 2018 to the City of Austin for payments for fire state aid and supplemental state aid. And then you'll also see below that the second place where the $207,000 transfer occurs from MMB to the LBO. On line 23, there's a $10,000 reduction to the Cosmetology Examiner's Board beginning in fiscal year 19. And so the total general fund changes in spending are total $80,000 for fiscal year 18-19, and then a reduction of $20,000 in the tails. We are also counting some revenue loss for some changes related to the Cosmetology Examiner's Board that total $10,000 in fiscal year 19, and then those carry forward into the tails. So you can see the net general fund spending on line 40 is $90,000, and then we have zero in the tails.
Thank you, Ms. Roberts. Does anyone have any questions for Ms. Roberts on the spreadsheet? We had a couple of senators temporarily leave us, so I think until we get a quorum of senators back, I'm going to do a temporary recess. All right, I'm going to reconvene. Senator Kiffmeyer, Representative Anderson, would you like to present the rest of the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have agreed to take the sections of the bill. Some of them are House only or Senate only, and where it's pertinent, we will just alternate describing them. And so the first one is a House.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first section that we are dealing with is on continuity of government. This was recommended to the legislature by General Nash. If there is an emergency situation and there wasn't a capital to meet in, it gives us the authorization to go elsewhere and then also to establish an emergency plan. So that's what this section does.
Mr. Chair, that those are several sections, actually,
throughout the bill.
Section, the next one is the collective bargaining agreements. Requires a commissioner of MMB to submit certain information when the commissioner submits collective bargaining agreements and compensation plans to the LCC for approval.
Mr. Chair, Section 5 is dealing with the display of business addresses with the Secretary of State. It gives privacy to individuals. If they have a business out of their home, they have the option of making it so they don't have to have their address posted. And then, Mr. Chair, the next section is dealing with CPA audits by the state auditor, making sure that the state auditor is following with standard practice. And then the next section is dealing with the data practices office out of the Department of Administration. Requires that they actually do advisory opinions. We've noticed that that has decreased significantly in the last couple of years, so that addresses that issue. The following article just allows individuals to make gifts to the state via website. Following that, Madam.
Okay. The next section, Section
14.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Section 14 is in regards to the federal funds report. It requires the Commissioner of Management and Budget to report the receipt of federal funds to the legislature with the governor's detailed operating budget. And that report must include specific items as listed in the language.
The following article is yours, Chair Nabla, dealing with the Clean Water Fund, making sure that if there's a positive balance, that it's goes into the unrestricted general fund balance at the close of the biennium. And then the following is kind of the base bill, the uncollectible debts. Again, that's yours, Chair Knobloch. That's part of the bill. And then the following article is dealing with Minute and our local units of government. They would be asked to test software so that we can avoid any glitches in the future. That was requested by counties. Following item is dealing with eyelash extension services, that they don't have to be licensed as a salon if they're only providing that service. Next item is dealing with hair braiding, and they're exempt from registration from the Board of Cosmetology. And then Senator.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Next two sections, 23 and 24, is in regards to the statewide voter registration system. and ineligible voters requires a county auditor to use the statewide voter registration system to identify certain voters for possible ineligibility to vote, investigate, challenge as required by eligibility, and notify law enforcement if it appears ineligible registered to vote. And these were from recommendations by the Office of the Legislative Auditor and a project that he had accomplished in regards to the state voter registration system.
Following item is with the Racing Commission. This is cleanup language that they've been looking for related to their operations, and it changes some of the reporting that they need to do. Following article is on the tax incident study, making sure that the federal tax burden is part of that study, so we have more information as the legislature. Following item is dealing with the state lottery and retailers, and provides for standards for canceling the contract of a lottery retailer related to violations and so forth. The following item is dealing with the valuation of public utility property rules. We just saw the court ruling yesterday dealing with this issue. This requires the Department of Revenue to actually amend the rules so that we are in compliance with what the court has dictated on that. Following item is dealing with the Nordic World Ski Cup, and it directs the Amateur Sports Commission to look at hosting that here in Minnesota. And then the next article.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The next article is all in regards to the Legislative Budget Office. The Legislative Budget Office was created last year through legislation that the governor signed, but we had several issues that we needed to clean up in regards to effective dates and other things. Section 1 deals with what was initiated last year was a Legislative Coordinating Commission. We're changing that to the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission, and that's in Section 1 and 2. Section 3 is about the Legislative Budget Office Director determining standards and procedures for fiscal notes. 4 and 9 are regard standards for access to data by the LBO, a requirement for state agencies to provide data according to the LBO standards and procedures. Section 5, LBO responsible to coordinate and deliver fiscal notes to the legislature beginning on September 1st, 2019, and that date change is from January 8th of 2019 to September 1st, 2019. This is part of a governor's desire to have this take effect after he leaves office, so be helpful in that regard. Number 6, Section 6, establishes the Legislative Budget Office Oversight Commission. Some other language there. Section 7 transfers fiscal note duties from MMB to the LBO effective September 1st, 2019. Section 8 makes the LBO director a public official for purposes of public disclosure requirements. Section 9, requirement for agencies to provide information to the LBO according to their standards procedures. 10 is transferring $207,000 from MMB to the LBO for local impact notes. Section 11 and 12, modifying effective dates, actually 11, 12, 13, 14, all have to do with adapting effective dates to fit with September 1st, 2019. Section 15 provides standards for initial appointments to the Oversight Commission, designation of the initial chair and the first meetings. Section 16 has to do with standards for orientation and training of the LBO director and staff. Section 17A is a repealer, repealing MMB responsibility for fiscal note, and 17B repealer repeals the task force on the LBO. And just to mention that Representative Vogel in the House, who is the chief author of this legislation last year, he and I have worked very closely in regards to this and have, in general, have agreement on the LBO. Just to mention, there are a couple things, though, that, again, we are working with MMB to make sure things work smoothly, and there may be some technical changes, amendment yet to come, and but for now, this is what we have to present.
All right. Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer and Representative Anderson.
And then, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry, Senator Kiffmeyer.
We do have two amendments I'm not quite sure how you want to proceed with them.
All right. Well, I think we should move the main articles first, and then I guess maybe it depends on the type of amendment. We can, if they're just technical amendments, we can take them right away. If they're more substantive, we'll have to see. Maybe we want more discussion on them. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Kiffmeyer or Representative Anderson, on the data practices advisory opinions, so on page 15, begins on line 4. When I read that, it looks like it could be interpreted as the commissioner providing a legal opinion and providing an opinion regarding a person's rights. Can you give me a little background as to, you know, what is the intent of that section? I know that, you know, in terms of Campaign Finance Disclosure Board, we have for years received advisory opinions, and I've always been of the opinion that that's advisory opinion is in effect an unadopted rule. And when I read this, I can understand why you want a member of the legislature to have access to this data. And if I could just have a better explanation as to what you are driving at here. I'm just concerned about legal opinions and giving folks an opinion regarding their legal rights.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Newman. This is for only advisory opinions. We have a process in place where it does go to the Office of Administrative Hearings for an actual legal opinion, but these are just advisory opinions, and we don't change that at all with this. We're just making sure that the legislature has access to that, and then it also makes it so that it's requiring the Data Practices Office, that's part of the Department of Administration, to actually issue advisory opinions because they have been refusing to issue advisory opinions, and so that rectifies that.
Senator Newman.
Representative Anderson, is there any place in this body of law that you are referring to which defines the parameters of an advisory opinion, so that the folks who are receiving it know that it is not something that they can rely on from a legal standpoint?
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Gehring is available to offer that advice.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Chair, Senator Newman, there is language in the section 13.072 that you don't see in the bill here, but it is in current statute that provides that these opinions are advisory in nature. There is a safe harbor provision in there, so if a person requests an opinion related to their right to access data and they rely on that opinion, then they do get some presumptions in a legal proceeding related to their actions in regard to the data, but like I said, much of that is not in this subdivision one that's in the bill. It's in existing law.
And
Senator Newman.
If you could you provide me with that site so that I could take a look at it, please?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sure that site will be given to you, Senator Newman. The issue here, the main two things that are happening here is that the legislature having the ability to have an advisory opinion, and secondly, that instead of the may, it's a must. So the reports from the Data Practices Commission and members of that commission have been that the May has been too generous for them and that there have been needed advisory opinions, but action hasn't been happening. So changing the May to must makes it clear that those that when requested, and especially to give access to the legislature, when they need an advisory opinion. But this is not new work for them. This is an office that has been active for a very long time and well-established. So advisory opinions from them, we just want to be sure they actually do those advisory opinions because they are important.
Senator Newman.
Senator Kiffmeyer, you know, I understand what you're telling me, and I'm not objecting to the issuance of advisory opinions. What I'm trying to do is get to the heart of what are the parameters of that advisory opinion. That's the portion here that I don't necessarily understand. At this point, I'll take a look at it, and if I have any disagreement with it, I'll get back to you and Representative Anderson. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Senator Kiffmeyer?
We'll take care of that and give Senator Newman any information he needs to answer his question from either Mr. Gehring or Ms. Stephanie James from the Senate Council.
Representative Anderson? All right. I think now maybe would be a good time to have any testifiers come forward that would like to testify. I think Commissioner Franz has indicated he'd like to testify. Commissioner Franz, welcome to the Supplemental Conference Committee.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here tonight. I appreciate the work that the committee is doing. I know that the Chair Knobloch, you know that I can talk sometimes a long time, but I have no intention of doing that tonight. I just have a few comments I'd like to make to clarify a few technical issues. On Article 1, Section 14, about the federal funds reporting requirement, we certainly think that the data should be reported because it actually is being reported. We believe this is a duplicative report. And so the federal funds report goes to the Legislative Audit Committee and, Advisory Commission. And one of the things that happens right now is we report this data when federal funds need to be used or accessed, and we report the data to the LAC, and the information that's required in this report is already being reported. And we believe that this language is also doesn't match up with our biennial reporting and, in fact, could be kind of confusing language. So we just think it's duplicative language, and we think we certainly want to be as efficient as we can to make sure the legislature has the information, but we think it's already provided, Mr. Chair. In Article 1, Section 16, there's a requirement for uncollectible debts. There is currently quarterly reporting required by agencies to report to MMB about uncollectible debts on a quarterly basis. This requirement would require that we, for any agency that has over $10,000 in uncollectible debts, to report that to the oversight agency commission. I'm sorry, the oversight committee for that particular agency. And once again, that information is available, and any committee chair or legislator can request that information at any time. We just wonder if whether that's the right amount to trigger this reporting that we're not sure would be necessary. So there was really no opportunity for us to study whether this is an efficient way to report that information. Clearly we want to make sure it gets to the legislature, but we just wanted to talk about maybe the threshold should be something other than $10,000. And then the last thing I wanted to mention was on the transfer of the fiscal note process to the Legislative Budget Office. As Chair Kiffmeyer mentioned, we're working closely together on this. We really want to pledge our support to make sure this process happens efficiently and effectively. It's in everyone's best interest for this office to be successful, and we are working on some other details to work on some of that. We do have a concern about the effective date. We believe that the original agreement was for January 8th, 2019. We think that should still be the effective date. Still gives the office time to ramp up and be ready and allow for the transition that Chair Kiffmeyer has provided for in the article. We do, however, we want to support the LBO, but we actually don't want to fund it. And so we would request that the $207,000 transferred in 2020 and 2021 not be transferred. That is there because of the local note requirement that's going to be performed by the LBO. But those funds that come in from the local authorities is a much broader group of activities than just the local notes. The local notes are only a small portion of that $207,000. MMB provides a lot of support for local governments in terms of the budgeting process, the bonding process. So there's a lot of in activity that we do. So we would prefer that transfer not be made at that time. The only other thing I want to mention is sort of what's not in the bill, and that is the governor's request for a sexual harassment prevention office. And we understand it's not there. We had requested, I think it was $6.3 million for 2019 and $4.6 million for 2021. We think that's important work. We've done a lot of work, we think, in trying to assess the problems of sexual harassment in the state workforce. We want to continue to address that, and we would request that the conference committee consider that going forward. With that, Mr. Chair, that's the only comments that I have.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Franz. Any questions for Commissioner Franz? Thank you, Commissioner. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Commissioner Holt. Assistant Commissioner Holt. Excuse me. Welcome to the Supplemental Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for having me here today. I'm here to express the department's concerns about a couple of provisions in the committee article proposed for Senate File 3656. But first, I want to commend the conference committee for adopting the Senate position preserving the department's budget during this year where there are significant federal tax policy changes. However, we have strong concerns about Section 33, which is entirely new language that we have not seen and was not heard in either committee this session. An earlier version of the omnibus bill contained a requirement to complete a study regarding pipeline valuation. This new language requiring an amendment to Rule 8100 to be in place by October of 2018 is both unrealistic and inappropriate. The last time this rule was revised, it took over a year to ensure that the process could include input from stakeholders. Moreover, this rule is the subject of a tax court ruling issued earlier this week. The department has already announced that we will be appealing this decision to the Supreme Court of Minnesota. Therefore, it would be premature to consider making any changes to this rule until the court has had the opportunity to rule on the issue. We also remain concerned about the language in this bill adding new requirements to the instance analysis. We are eager to serve Minnesota taxpayers efficiently and effectively as possible. We look forward to working with you to incorporate these changes into Senate File 3656. Thank you.
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner Ho. Any questions for Commissioner Ho? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner, did you see the provision regarding the tax incident study? You're opposed to the inclusion of federal tax burden in the incident study? Did I hear that right?
Commissioner Hall.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Garofalo, our issue with the federal incident study is that the federal tax burden is measured in different ways with different assumptions than the state tax burden, and therefore, by using the federal tax data and comparing it to the state tax data, we often will create some distortions in potentially the reporting, which may lead to incorrect policy decisions.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Garofalo.
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, would one of those distortions be that wealthy people pay up a higher percentage of their income in taxes than lower income folks be? Would that be one of those distortions?
Commissioner Ho.
Mr. Chair, Representative Garofalo, I'm not prepared to answer that question this time.
Okay. Mr. Chairman and Commissioner, thank you very much.
Other questions for Commissioner Holt? Thank you very much, Commissioner Holt. Commissioner Mossman. Commissioner Mossman, welcome to the Supplemental Finance Conference Committee.
Thank you. Good evening, Mr. Chairman and conferees. Thank you for the opportunity to talk tonight. Matt Mossman, Commissioner of Administration. It's late. I appreciate all your hard work, so I, too, will be brief. First, let me just say I appreciate certainly the conferees having not accepted the harmful budget cuts that would have made it difficult for the department to do its work. I do want to touch base quickly and just in light of opportunities to have conversations with you in the next few days about recommendations of the governors that are not in the bill, both of which I think build on the biennial budget that is in place to correct items and gaps that we have identified since the biennial budget, or at least have become more clear. The first is a provision that the governor recommended that corrects an accounting shift that was enacted in 2004. It has a $4.67 million impact on the general fund. It would each year the department collects a small portion of lease revenues from capital complex tenants and deposits them into a special revenue fund called the Facilities Repair and Renovation Account. That money is collected to maintain the buildings on the capital complex and keep them in good working order. Since 2004, 50% of the amount collected each year is instead shifted to the general fund. Now, thankfully, the state no longer faces the large and persistent budget deficits, and This shift is no longer justified to balance the general fund budget. The governor recommends unwinding the shift so that those funds can go to the important asset preservation needs for which they are collected in the first place. So strongly encourage the committee to reconsider that governor's recommendation and to include that going forward. And I would just point out that the need is significant. We have identified have in process or have identified at least $44.5 million worth of asset preservation work that needs to be funded over the next 3 years from that source. The governor's recommendation also made a recommendation for a one-time $3 million appropriation to capitalize a building efficiency revolving loan fund that I just think is a very sensible strategy that's aimed at eliminating what has been an ongoing barrier to state agencies being able to make capital improvements that we know will deliver both long-term budget savings and long-term energy and water efficiencies. Under the fund, agencies would apply for funds to make capital improvements and then be required to use the initial savings to repay the fund so that the new efficiencies can be made to continue to make improvements in state government buildings over time. So I just think that this is a very sensible strategy, takes advantage of the off-stated preference for having state government operate more efficiently and to use those efficiencies to make government run better. So I encourage you to consider that proposal going forward. Finally, I do want to just comment, as there's already been some conversation tonight, and we are just kind of looking at the new iteration of the language related to the significant policy language related to the Data Practices Office and advisory opinions. The language has changed a bit in what came out tonight, and so we would like some more time to look at the language and better understand it, but we do continue to have significant concerns with regard to how this might impact what we believe has been working rather well for nearly three decades in terms of making sure folks have access to government records. The one thing I would just say, I know there's been some conversation about access to legislators to data practices opinions. Obviously, I think as many of you know, and it has come up, and the governor has made this point on various occasions, the legislature is not subject to the Data Practices Act. Certainly, if it was, I think some of the things that have been mentioned tonight would be addressed that way. Even so, legislators do request data and have in the past received opinions when they are the requesters of government data. So I think I just want to clarify a few things on that and happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Commissioner Mossman? Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner, on the issue of receiving advisory opinions, wasn't that a duty of this department a number of years back that they did, in fact, upon request, give out advisory opinions?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chairman and Chair Limmer, absolutely, and we still very much do. The department has issued, since its inception, roughly 900 data practice opinions, most of which data practice opinions, unless they're superseded, continue to remain available, accessible on our website and as a resource for articulating what the data practice laws mean and how they apply. And one of the things that I think is very important to point out in that regard is because of that, over time, there have indeed been fewer opinions issued on an annual basis, and the workload has shifted substantially instead to informal opinions, which more often than not, we get thousands of requests a year for assistance. And frankly, oftentimes those begin with the words, I would like an opinion on, and what people really want is they want access to the government data today if I can get it, or tomorrow if I can get it. And so what happens is we, 99, I won't put a percentage on it, but most of the time, we resolve that informally either by calling a local government, calling a state agency, helping a person to get that data, and that resolves the issue. This language here would prevent us from doing that, prevent us from doing that informal work and instead require formal advisory opinions, I believe, in all those cases.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
How would you be prevented from doing that? In the wording on that, could you give me the specifics on that?
Well, again, Mr. Chair and Senator Limmer, we're still trying to observe it ourselves, but as far as my quick glance at the language is that it completely eliminates the language of statute that gives discretion over the issuance of opinions and instead requires opinions to always be issued. And we absolutely do still issue opinions. We also do most of the work through informal assistance to individuals who contact us.
So, Mr. Chair,
Senator Limmer.
The existing language that's in statute now gives you discretion to say no to a request for an advisory opinion?
Commissioner Mussman.
Mr. Chair and Senator, you know, it's helpful because thank you for the questions because I really do think that as this gets more light on it, it's not always a straightforward process. To be honest, the professionals that work in this area would tell you that most of the time when folks call that initial call or two, they oftentimes will be requesting assistance or advice, and they may not even necessarily have the information that would help us help them. So let's say they have an open meetings law concern, but they have not maybe gotten a copy of the board agenda notice for the local unit of government or something like that. So some simple documentation which would really be helpful for us to help articulate whether or not the open meeting law was violated. So oftentimes there's an iterative process that has to go on before we can actually be giving meaningful assistance to people, and oftentimes then once we get that, we're able to give a very clear, based on previous opinions, direction as to what needs to happen or what needed to happen and to correct that behavior. To do an advisory opinion, and I'll be real brief, I want to point out that advisory opinions under the law are intended to be given deference, not by the courts. And so they obviously don't have to be followed, but that means that we invest a lot more time in advisory opinions. They by necessity need to be more rigorous and more researched in terms of a sort of a legal opinion. And so they do take more time. And oftentimes informal assistance is what people are really wanting because they want access to data.
Senator Newman.
Commissioner, you've just raised the issue that, and you're correct, the statute says that the advisory opinions have to be given due deference by the courts and other tribunals. So as the commissioner that's issuing the advisory opinion, are you thinking that the advisory opinion issued by the commissioner is providing legal advice and is legally binding?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I believe it's providing an opinion, a researched opinion. That's what's intended under the law, and that's what it's providing. Senator. It's not legal advice that anyone, if someone wants to sue for access to records, they would hire an attorney and get formal legal advice to do that. And I think that that practice is clear.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, so Commissioner, we've now established that it's not a legal opinion that you are offering under this particular statute. Do you feel that the opinion that you are issuing is legally binding in any way?
Commissioner Mossman.
Mr. Chair and Senator, I think maybe the best way to help appreciate it is that when the law was first put into place, there was an awareness that this was the foundation by which transparency in government was going to happen in Minnesota. And so requests are going to come up. And the intent of the Data Practices Office under the statute is to be that first, frankly, free place for citizens to come to get get their needs met without having to pursue expensive options like an appeal to the Office of Administrative Hearings or hire an attorney to go to court in order to get access to the government data that they rightly have access to. And so the whole purpose of the law is to give and structure is to have the authority to give advisory opinions that are not legally binding but are researched and grounded in both a review of the law and court opinions and et cetera, so that hopefully and most often people then follow that advice, have historically tended to follow that advice because they know that it's good advice, but it is not legally binding.
One more question, if I may, Mr. Chairman. So then as Commissioner, what does the phrase of due deference mean to you? What do you believe that effect has when the statute says the courts must give due deference to the advisory opinion that you issue? What do you as Commissioner believe that to mean?
Commissioner Mossman.
Well, I think it means a lot of things, but in short, Senator, I believe that it means that we need to invest on our end the appropriate amount of due diligence and legal research to have it be a thoughtful opinion, which, to the point, takes more time to do and do properly than informal advice. And I think it means, from the standpoint of citizens and the courts, that it gives a good, solid guidance for people to follow that they can trust. And if the case, what happens, I think, is it's really only the most complex cases that are then going to probably land in district court because the either there's vagaries in the law or there's other complexities in the fact scenario that just makes it a challenging situation that someone wants to pursue further.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions for Commissioner Mossman? Seeing none, thank you, Commissioner.
Have a good evening. Thank you.
Is there anyone else who wishes to testify? Oh, yes, sir. Welcome to the Supplemental Conference Committee. Could you state your name for the record and give us your testimony?
Yes, my name's Rob Dorr. I'm a resident of Blaine, Minnesota, and just for the record, that's the only capacity that I'm speaking in at this moment. I have actually made I didn't plan on testifying, but in listening to the changes to the bill and to the testimony, I've made several requests for an opinion from the iPad on data practices issues. And every single time I'm told that I'm not going to get an opinion because they've addressed this issue before. And every time it's usually a case going back to the early to mid-90s, and it's tangentially related to the situations that I've had. I just looked through my email, and I had six of them that I could find where I was told that I would not be getting an advisory opinion. And most of these situations have to deal with government entities and the fees that they're charging for access to government data that are not consistent with statute. They reference the previous advisory opinions that tangentially related to that particular topic, but not the specifics of that instance. So I was essentially left with nothing to do because I would present those advisory opinions to the government entities and they would brush me off as, you know, that's not related to this particular instance, but I couldn't then go and get an advisory opinion on that particular instance. It just became a loop. So I just wanted to give my personal favor to this these proposed changes. I think it would be good for open government and good for the citizens of the state.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Dorr. Any questions for Mr. Dorr? Thank you, Mr. Dorr. Appreciate your coming forward. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In regards to these advisory opinions, I would say there's a difference between customer service, which is when you answer the phone, you'd expect them to do that. But that is very different from what Commissioner Mossman described as written, researched opinions. And that is what we are asking for. There are times when you want a researched with recent data, not 20-year-old data or other data, but to the pertinent facts. The one thing about advisory opinions, they are always specific to the situation. They're not general law. They are opinions in regards to those particular facts and those circumstances and should be given in the context of current information. So even if they have a previous advisory opinion that may have some bearing, they can certainly make use of that, but that is no substitute for what citizens are asking for. Also in regards, Mr. Mossman has previously said that the legislature had no standing to request advisory opinions, and yet he's testifying today that in the past they have given the legislature or legislators some advisory opinions. And so I think it's very important that we clear that up in this legislation, which we have done with the language that is here today, explicitly stating that the legislature, upon request, is able to must have an advisory opinion. But I think it is very important. This is critical to transparency of government for the people of Minnesota, that they were formed for this purpose and they should function within that. And so I strongly stand with our language in this bill.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on the bill? All right. Senator Rosen had to step out for a moment. I'm wondering if I could have one of the senators move the SGS 18-09 language just to get us formally in front of us. Senator Benson?
Move the SGS 1809. Do you want me to walk through? I'm going to come join you until Senator Rosen.
All right. Well, thank you. Thank you, Senator Benson. And actually, if you want, you can move the whole, I guess I would say at this point, perhaps not. Oh, here comes Senator Rosen. Oh. We're just about replaced, Senator Rosen.
Irreplaceable, Mr.
Chair. All these ambitious senators around here, you know. No, I asked Senator Benson to come up and do it.
Mr. Senator Chair, Benson. I know better than to mess with the finances.
So in trouble.
No. Senator Rosen, Senator Benson had just started to move the SGS 18-09 language. I guess why don't you...
Mr. Chair, I do have a question.
Oh, okay.
To Representative Anderson or Senator Kiffmeyer. When your hairdresser calls about a particular issue, that's pretty serious. I'm just saying.
I hear
so,
you.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So is that taken care of? We've taken the House language, or was it the same, or how are we doing on that?
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair, we're taking care of our hairdressers, yes.
Okay. Thank you. And I think we addressed it, the local government testing of business software applications. We addressed that, correct?
Yes.
The data practices, of course, address that. And then the valuation of public utility property rules, correct?
We just have an amendment on that piece, but yes.
Is that passed?
No, not yet.
Okay, super. Okay, Mr. Chair, I would like to move the SGS 18-09 article. And I would like to move sections 1 through 3, 7 through 11, 32, and 35, the continuity of government, found is House language, found on R1, R3, R16 through 24, and R67.
Could you repeat those sections again?
Absolutely. Sections 1 through 3, 7 through 11, 32, and 35, subdivision 1.
All right. Senator Rosen moves the SGS 18-09 language, Sections 1 through 3, 7 through 11, 32, and 35, subdivision 1. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are again now on the state government operations article, and the chairs did a very good job of explaining each one of these sections, but this is section 4 I'd like to move, the collective bargaining agreement, section 5.
Oh, wait. I've got to let me adopt the other one then.
Oh,
there's
we didn't
no,
do that. That's right. I'm sorry.
No. Is there any discussion to the Rosen motion to adopt the sections related to the continuity of government? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt sections 1 through 3, 7 through 11, 32, and subdivision 1 of section 35, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? More prevails. That language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I don't get better, you're going to replace me again. I would like to move section 4, collective bargaining agreement, found on R5, section 5, the display of business addresses by the Secretary of State, found on R11, section 6, the CPA audits by state auditor, found on R12, section 12, the data practices advisory opinions.
Senator Rosen moves sections 4, 5, 6, and 12. Is there discussion? See no discussion. All in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt sections 4, 5, 6, and 12, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move section 13, the gifts to state, that be out of the website, found on R36, House provision. Section 14, the federal funds report, Senate provision, found on R36. Section 15, the Clean Water Fund, the House-only provision, found on R38. Section 16, the Uncollectible Debts, House-only, found on R39.
Senator Rosen moves sections 13, 14, 15, and 16. Is there discussion to that Rosen motion? See no discussion. All in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt sections 13 through 16, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Section 17, the local government testing of business software applications. Sections 18, 21, and 22, which is the eyelash extension services, House language, found on R49 and R52. I'd also like to move Sections 19, 20, 35, subdivision 2, the hair braiding, found on R49, R52.
Okay, Senator Rosen moves sections 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, and subdivision 2 of section 35. And I guess I'm tempted to ask if there were, you know, demonstrations of these things going on in the committee. It seems like it's changed a lot since I was on that committee years ago. But
Mr. Chair,
Representative Anderson,
you'd be an excellent candidate for it. He's got hair.
I'm sorry I asked. Any discussion to the Rosen motion? See, no discussion. All in favor of the Rosen motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move sections 23 and 24, the statewide voter registration system and ineligible voters, Senate only, found on R53. Sections 25 through 29 is the Racing Commission language, House only, found on R54 and R56. And sections 30, which is the tax incident study, House only language, found on R56.
Senator Rosen moves sections 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, and 30. Is there discussion? Seeing no discussion, all in favor of the Rosen motion to adopt sections 23 through 30, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. That language is adopted. Senator Rosen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move Section 31, the State Lottery, House-only measures, found on R57, Section 33, the Valuation of Public Utility Property Rules, and Section 34, the Nordic World Cup Ski Championship, House-only, found on R72 and R73. And that is the end of that particular article.
Senator Rosen moves sections 31, 33, and 34 of the first article. Is there any discussion? Senator Benson.
And then Representative Anderson.
Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we move the amendment to section 33 now, or do we do the adoption first and then?
I think we'll do the adoption, and then we can move the amendment. Senator Vinson.
Mr. Chair, to Section 34, Nordic World Cup Ski Championship, could I just have a brief background on where this came from and what it does?
Sure. Who would like to take that? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Benson, this is with Jessie Diggins. She won the Nordic Ski Olympic gold medal. She's from the Stillwater area, and she came to the Capitol. This is a mission of her and also an organization of the Nordic Ski folks from the state of Minnesota trying to get this. So what this language does is it just directs the Amateur Sports Commission to support a bid to host this international ski event. And it's just to get them engaged since they have experience in doing things of this nature.
Senator Benson?
And they are supportive of it too, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions on the motion? Seeing none, Senator Rosen renews her motion to adopt Sections 31, 33, and 34. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. That language is adopted. Let's see. I think there is an amendment being passed out. Yeah, that one. Yep. Okay, it hasn't been passed out yet. It's the A-133 amendment. And I'll move that amendment, and I'll while it's being passed out, I think this is primarily a technical amendment. I'll ask Representative Anderson to speak to it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was just an inadvertent omission of the pipeline operating language, and that was it. It was intended to be there. We just forgot.
All right. Any discussion to the A-133 amendment? See no discussion. All in favor of the A-133 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The A-133 amendment is adopted. And I know there's at least one other amendment, but why don't we go through the rest of the article, Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are on page 28, line 18, the Legislative Budget Office article. And I'd like to move section, and that goes to through the end, through 35.31. So we're starting at 28.18. I'd like to move sections 1, and this is mainly the LBO, all LBO, yeah. So I would like to, okay, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the article for the Legislative Budget Office. It starts on page 28, line 18, and runs through page 35, line 31.
Senator Rosen moves the Legislative Budget Office article.
And, Mr. Chair, there's two repealers also.
Yes, and there are 17 sections. Senator Rosen moves sections 1 through 17. And that would be page 28, line 17, through page 35, line 31. And there is a repealer in section 17. I'm wondering if staff could explain the repealer. Actually, there's two repealers. Who would like to take that? Mr. Gehring, do you have that?
Mr. Chair, yeah. So there are two repealers in Section 17. Paragraph A is repealing some language that currently provides that MMB administers the fiscal note process, which I would say is a conforming repealer to go along with the establishment of the LBO. And then paragraph B is repealing the Legislative Budget Office task force that was enacted last year.
All right, thank you. Is there discussion on this article? This is a major article with the changes in implementing the Legislative Budget Office. Senator Kiffmeyer, Representative Anderson, we did present this, but are there any other comments that you'd like to make?
Well, Mr. Chair, I would say that in response to Commissioner Franz when he was talking about the date, one thing that the governor had stressed is that he wanted this to not take effect until after he left office. That is why the January 8th at that time was chosen as a date. But the governor said after he took office. So moving that date to September 1st is perfectly reasonable and with the purviews of the agreement in initiating the Legislative Budget Office. So that's the one comment that I would make. Otherwise, I've already commented on other issues at that time.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the effective date is what it is due to the veto, the line item veto last year by the governor that delayed things as well. And so this will give us the time necessary to make sure that this is a successful office.
Thank you. Is there a discussion on the motion? All right. Seeing no discussion then, Senator Rosen renews her motion to adopt the Legislative Budget Office article. That's sections 1 through 17, page 28, line 17, through page 35, line 31. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The Rosen language is adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are two repealers on section 35 on page 28 that we didn't get to. Back in the last article.
Let's, on page 28, I guess we missed a couple of repealers earlier. Where are those again? Oh, okay. No, page 28. This was on the first article then.
Right.
Yeah, Mr. Gehring, could you speak to the repealers on page 28, section 35?
Mr. Chair, so I do think when you did the motions earlier, you did include section 35 as part of the motions you were adopting.
I did, but I'd like to make sure people are aware of them.
So, Mr. Chair, then subdivision 1 on line 28.13 and 28.14 repeals a series of sections that are really being recodified in the continuity of the legislature language. So there's policy language in earlier in this article that requires the legislature to create a continuity plan in the event of a disaster that's replacing these sections that are being repealed in current statute. And then subdivision 2 is the repealer related to the hair braiding process. This is just a conforming repealer to go along with the other policy language you've already discussed related to the registration of hair braiders.
Any questions on the repealers? Thank you, Mr. Gehring. Senator Rosen, do you have any other questions on that subject? No. Okay. All right. Are there other amendments to consider?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have the A-132 amendment.
Senator Kiffmeyer moves the A-132 amendment.
Yes,
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so, Mr. Chair, this is an agreed-upon amendment by the House and Senate. It is Section 7 on the actual amendment itself. And I would have Representative Anderson go over explaining this section.
Chair Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, the first Section 7 that is part of this amendment is dealing with private attorney contracts. It directs the Attorney General to not enter into contingency fees for the state. And that's pretty much it in a nutshell. And then... Mr. Chair, the following article then would be Senator Kiffmeyer.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Following article is a bill from on information technology on Minute. And the first part of it in Section 1 has to do with the evaluation of information technology in regards to the legislative auditor. May submit to the Legislative Audit Commission a list of 3 to 5 projects proposed for review and then select the projects. There is language that goes into that. And then the Legislative Audit Commission would establish an evaluation plan that identifies elements that the legislative auditor must include in an evaluation. Section 2 is regarding the governor submitting a three-part budget to the legislature. This has to do with striking detailed recommendations as to information technology expenditures as part of the detailed operating budget. Section 3 has to do with information technology and cybersecurity. This is basically taking what you saw in Section 2, deleting language and putting it in Section 3, and enabling the Commissioner of Management and Budget in consultation with the State Chief Information Officer, budget guidelines for the recommendations required by this subdivision. And most importantly is the amount to be budgeted each fiscal year for maintenance and enhancement of cybersecurity must be at least 3.5% of a department or agency's total operating budget for information and telecommunications technology and services in that year. And this, Mr. Chair, is customary in the private sector that whenever programs such as IT are developed, that money is set aside by a percentage, matter of fact, usually higher than this. But this is the amount that we have started with at this time, is that 3.5%. The next Section 4 has to do with, instead of having an independent minute agency, it would be moved, the entire entity would be moved to be a part of the Commissioner of Administration, and there would be a Division of Information Technology under the supervision of the Commissioner of Administration. Section 6 is responsibility, and we have divided the duties, and there are areas in Section 6 where the Division of Information Technology preserves the responsibility for the state data centers, mainframes, servers, data network, electronic mail, help desks for those components, maintenance, problem resolution, and regular upgrades and replacement for those components. New language in line page 5, line 6, the chief information officer responsible for providing or entering into managed services contracts for the provision, improvement, and development of the following IT systems and services, desktops, laptops, database, office systems, reporting, other standard software tools, business application software, help desk, maintenance, regular upgrades, and network-connected output devices. And again, that has to do with managed services contracts. However, going further, all state agency employees whose work primarily involves functions specified are employees of the Division of Information Technology under the Department of Administration, a technical change. On Section 7, the Division of Information Technology structure and personnel, there's titling changes to conform with Commissioner and the Division of Information Technology. Other than that, there's no substantive change. Section 8 is cybersecurity systems. Repeating again, in Section 8, at least 3.5% as well, effective date July 1st. Section 9, consultation required. Every state agency must consult with the Division of IT to determine the IT cost. That is, if the division is selected by an agency to perform the project. Section 10 is more language, but it does make a requirement on line 8.2. The state agency that implements electronic government services for fees, license, and sales or other purposes may use a single entry site. Section 11, Information Technology Revolving Fund. Section 12, Program Participation. Section 13, Rates. This is very important to the agencies. An invoice or statement to an agency from the Chief Information Officer must include clear descriptions of the services of the Division of Information Technology has provided. Invoice or statement must categorize or code services in a manner prescribed by the agency, or the CIO office must provide supplemental information with an invoice or statement that categorizes. And Mr. Chair and Madam Chair, we've had many conversations with other agencies and small boards that this was an issue. This is language to help make things more accurate and to make the work more efficient. Section 14, again, is just a statutory transfer and revisor's instructions in regards to language. But the main goal, Mr. Chair and members of the Commission, this is Senator Rosen's bill, co-authored by Senator Newman and myself. The main goal here is that an agency that has the responsibility to implement the law should have the authority and the flexibility to choose either minute, a private sector, or in-house IT, to carry out the information technology duties, software, whatever that may be, that they are responsible for. With the with that structure being complete, we believe that that is an agreed-to language for the A-132. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
And members, I see there are two repealers in here that we should probably have staff talk about. That's on page 2, section 36, there's a repealer. And at the end of the amendment, page 10, section 16, there's a repealer. I wonder if staff could tell us what those repealers are.
Mr. Chair, I think Ms. James, who has worked on this quite a bit, could give
James.
That information.
Mr. Chair and members, the repealer that is on page 10, line 12, is an appropriation for a state agency information and telecommunications technology project, or a requirement that appropriations for state agency IT projects be made to the chief information officer. And then the other repealer has to do with the contingency fee agreements. It's a statute that permits the same kinds of contracts that are being disallowed under this section.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. James. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I have a question on page 7 regarding the 3.5% of a dedicated dollar amount to maintenance enhancement of cybersecurity. I get a little nervous when I look at a dedicated percentage that's coming out of a budget in every fiscal year. And I'm just wondering, take for example, if the equipment was new in year one, and in year two we have to now dedicate 3.5% to enhancing a one-year-old system, could that happen? And what if there's no need to maintain or enhance a cybersecurity system?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There is always a need for cybersecurity in this day and age, always. And it doesn't matter the age of the equipment. Cybersecurity is protection not just of the equipment, access to the equipment, access to the data, access to the software. Cybersecurity includes in-house as well as exterior attempts to hack or interfere. And so it's a whole variety, and this is a standard, but it is only 3.5% for information and telecommunications technology systems and services, so it's not their entire budget. It's 3.5% of that specific area, and this is an ongoing need. We used to have paper security with file drawers and regular keys. Now with all our data on a digital basis, it is the cybersecurity, but this has always been the case, and it should always be a part of any budget. The fact that this is rather a new concept, I would expect that many agencies are already doing some portion of this percent as due diligence, as what they should be doing, and including cybersecurity in all of their functioning. I think for us, the legislature, to set a base standard of 3.5% of that is a very appropriate amount to go with at this time. But it isn't like this is a new thing for them. Cybersecurity is and should be an ongoing need.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Limmer.
Sir Kiffmeyer, I understand the importance of cybersecurity. I'm more concerned about the one-size-fits-all perspective of 3.5%. And I would imagine there might be some small agencies that 3.5% on a cost-to-scale basis may not be enough. And in some very large agencies with a very large budget, 3.5%, could it possibly be more than enough? Does the one-size-fits-all, is it appropriate in this manner?
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It is not necessarily a one-size-fits-all because it does vary upon the budget and what they have expended for information and telecommunications technology systems. So that this is a core duty and a core responsibility, and I think the 3.5% varies by that. But we've heard increasingly the issues of cybersecurity. If you start finessing and go agency by agency, board by board, then we get into micromanaging as a legislature. I think 3.5% is up to them as far as how they describe cybersecurity and a variety of approaches they may take. It gives them good flexibility, and yet at least gives them a base amount that they should be using for a very critical area.
And Mr. Chair, if
you
could.
Representative Anderson.
The 3.5% amount was predicated on the amount that Minnit had described to us as a need for cybersecurity. And so when you budget that out, it gets them the money that they are looking for the purpose of cybersecurity.
I have Senator Benson and Senator Newman. Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Limmer raises good questions. There is language that says at least 3.5%. So if somebody needs more, they should. The emerging and likely never-ending threat of cybersecurity calls us to implement a cultural change. We collect information that others are not allowed to collect. We have a unique responsibility for maintaining the business continuity of operations. So cybersecurity could include critical components of continuity planning, denial of service attacks that are regularly shutting down police departments and courts when bad actors don't like a particular court decision would be cybersecurity, while not specifically directed in this language. The ability for an agency, if there was a ransomware attack, to respond to that without having to pay for data that doesn't belong to the bad actors, but instead belongs to the citizens of this state. And so I think a foundation of 3.5% sets a culture that says we are going to implement and actively pursue a strong profile against those who would attack us in the cyberspace. And so I would support that language.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to make sure that the members recognize that we're not talking about 3.5% of the budget. We're talking about 3.5% of the expenditures on information and telecommunications technology systems and services, so that there is no confusion on that. The other thing I wanted to just support what Representative Anderson testified to, and that is in both the Transportation Committee and in the State Government Committee in the Senate, there was testimony by Minnit that supports the notion that a figure of 3.5% of these expenditures is a reasonable and accepted amount for purposes of future maintenance, and that's primarily the reason that I do support this language. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Newman. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it's important to recognize so often we focus on the exterior threats, hacking or a variety of those, but this also can include internal training for the handling of the data security. So it is much broader than just a computer software kind of thought. We find that many times the vulnerability of data is internal as well, so that training. So it has a variety of applications for cybersecurity.
Representative Anderson? Okay. All right. Any other discussion to the A-132 amendment? Someone want to testify to the A-132 amendment? Commissioner France.
Mr. Chair, members, I don't really know where to start. This is not progress, in my view, to get this bill wrapped up. First of all, this amendment wasn't posted ahead of time, so we weren't able to really study this and provide a more thorough testimony about this issue. But secondly, if you really want to solve cybersecurity, what you need to do is fund it. You don't need to make some arbitrary limit on a budget system to try to assume that that's going to solve the problem. Let me give you an example. And this is why this is not a partisan issue. In 2008, in Governor Pawlenty's administration, they began the process of converting the Department of Revenue to a sophisticated, integrated tax system. At the time, we had a bunch of independent or individual tax systems that weren't communicating with one another. So we made a lot, big investment. It was $50, $60 million. I can't remember the number. It was a big number, $60 million. We started that process in 2008, and when I got there in 2011, we were still working on it. And every year we would add a new system to it. It was a really complicated system, but we went through it thoughtfully. We put the platform together, and it's one of the best integrated tax systems in the country. We used FAST contractors, as some of you know about, did an excellent job. But there we wanted to fix a system, an IT system, and we did so by spending money and time and effort, and it worked. And it still works today. So I just want to say that I understand the concerns and complaints you have about what's happened, and I'm sorry it happened. I feel terrible that the issues have happened with some of our IT projects, and we need to correct that and go forward. But that doesn't excuse the fact that in order for us to manage government effectively, and especially in trying to manage the legislature's direction in 2011 to consolidate the IT system, which was never really funded effectively, every year I've been in MMB, we've asked for IT security, and we've gotten very, very little, if any. So I think it's been a lack of funding and a lack of direction, and right now we have one of the most talented commissioners, Commissioner Clyburn, working that agency and trying to come up with a plan to make sure these projects are more effective, and you're entitled to that. The citizens of Minnesota, they're entitled to that, but this is not a step forward to have this reorganization occur on July 1 of this year. I believe I just saw the statute, and if I'm reading the effective date correctly, it's too fast, it's too soon, it's not thoughtful, and it's not the way we're going to wrap up this bill. So I just wanted to make that clear before we finish with this amendment. Thank you. I'll take any questions.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Newman.
In response, Mr. Chairman, to the commissioner's comments, we have funded the Menlars project, and we have funded it over and over and over again and have had nothing but failure. Commissioner Clyburn has stepped in and candidly, I think she's really doing an admirable job with what the task that she has undertaken. But the Menlars project in particular started out at about $45 million, and then we funded it again, and we were at $93 million. Now the governor wants another $43 million, and there isn't any guaranteed functionality of that system for another 2 years. So, I really do take issue with the fact that there has been a refusal to fund cybersecurity in these programs, because we did fund it in the instance of Menlars, and we have met nothing but resistance to any kind of suggestions that we move outside of Minute in order to do it and try and hire somebody from the outside to help. In point of fact, 3M was involved, then Hewlett-Packard was involved, and DPS fired both of them. So I really do disagree, Commissioner, with the notion that you would come forward and say this is not funded properly. Perhaps overall funding could have been better system-wide. That I don't know. But I will tell you that I am really concerned with how effective Minute is in handling this state's cybersecurity and software programs. And I have just lost faith in their ability to do the job. And whether this is a step backwards or not, I suppose, depends on where you're standing when you look at it. But when I look at Minlars, the people in the state of Minnesota are not being well served by Minute. It is costing them an enormous amount of money. They have been horribly inconvenienced. And I really am nervous about the budget that's going to come forward next year to try and address not just the software program, but the damages that have been caused to the people of the state of Minnesota by reason of the failures of Minute. So I guess, Mr. Commissioner, you and I are just going to have to agree to disagree on this issue. But in point, we have funded MNLARS, and it has been a failure.
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Senator, I certainly appreciate your work on this. I appreciate your concerns. I have the same concerns, and you're exactly right. The MNLARS system has been a failure, and we need to fix it. You know, I just have to tell you, though, coming from the private sector, these things happen, unfortunately, everywhere. And state government is not unique to these kind of problems. There are many private sector companies that try to implement major reform. This is not an excuse, don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that this is not unique to state government. Big IT projects have difficulties sometimes, and they fail in the private sector, they fail in the public sector. And a failure is horrible no matter where it happens, because it wastes dollars and it wastes efficiencies. The people of Minnesota deserve to have that system working and working effectively. You're exactly right. And the governor and Commissioner Clyburne couldn't agree more. I just disagree with making this move at this time so precipitously without having more thought put into it. I'm not saying we can't do a better job, because we can do a better job. But I don't think this transaction and this 3.5% allocation of cybersecurity is not going to, I think, fix the problem. But I'm not arguing with you. I understand your positions.
Senator Kiffmeyer?
Yes. I do want to mention that last year, Representative Anderson and myself, as chairs of state government, in negotiations, we did offer the governor cybersecurity, fully funding what he had requested. But the governor rejected that and instead chose to use the money for operational increases. And the governor made a choice. The governor made a choice that cybersecurity was not as important as operational increases. And so just to lay the record clear in regards to what this legislature has done and offered in regards to cybersecurity.
Mr. Chair?
Commissioners.
I'd like to make the record clear. We asked for over $140 million in that particular state government committee area, and you funded about $40 million. So we wanted to pay the contract for our talented employees. Yes, we wanted cybersecurity, and yes, we wanted a number of other programs. And we were only able to get $40 million or so out of that particular target. So to say that we only wanted to pay our employees, which, of course, we do, without paying them adequately, we wouldn't be able to do the job we do for the citizens of Minnesota. But the request wasn't for just for personnel. The request was for IT. It was for personnel. It was for other important programming, of which we got very little. But that's part of the negotiations. But to state that we had some preference, we wanted all of it, to be honest with you. I don't think they're paying attention to us, Madam Chair.
Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to go back to the 3.5%. Respectfully, Commissioner, every IT project, every system maintenance plan should have a security profile built into it. Some of this money should already be in place in these budgets. Maybe they're at 2%. Maybe they're at 9%. The banking industry, the standard's 9%. And so I guess the question that we need to resolve before this issue is settled, and it doesn't need to be answered publicly, but as we're building these systems, as we're maintaining IT systems, computer systems, software programs, as we're developing apps for phones, are we building in security as part of a culture? Are we moving the thought process for our employees to one of, we don't open emails from unknown sources? Are we advancing security in the behavior of state government? And that, I think that this 3.5% is a proxy for that conversation that I don't know needs to be settled right here, right now. But I think it's a question that we should have an answer to before we finish this bill.
At this point, I'm going to call a temporary recess. All right, I'm going to reconvene the meeting. We were on the A-132 amendment. Is there other discussion to the amendment? Senator Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to remind members that this is language that has been heard in regards to committee hearings. This is a bill that has language that has come through either the Senate or the House and been voted on the floor of either the House or the Senate, and has been a language that was publicly discussed in a great deal over the past legislative session.
Representative Anderson, anything else?
No, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, any other discussion? All right. Senator Kiff, Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just to Representative Anderson and Senator Kiffmeyer, I mean, Representative Anderson, I recall you, that the government of state government committee held hearings on this and pretty extensively in discussion on the House floor. And Senator Kiffmeyer, this has been vetted and similarly in the Senate.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, yes, it has extensive discussions and as well in the Senate in regards to the minute language.
Thank you.
All right. Scene. Sorry. Please come forward. Okay. We're going to take some short testimony here, and then it is getting late, and then we're going to vote. Please give us your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is John Eichten, and I'm the Legislative Director for Minnesota IT Services. There's been a lot of discussion today about the 3.5% cybersecurity mandate, but I just want to make very clear what the other provisions in this amendment would do related to Minute, and that is roll back very significantly the state's IT consolidation effort that was initiated in 2011. This is contrary to the direction of almost every state in the nation who are seeking to consolidate IT, to reduce duplication of IT across agency silos, to fully leverage the state's IT buying power, and to better defend our state systems from increasing cyber threats. Since that consolidation, as Commissioner Franz noted, it was not a funded consolidation. It was a mandate. Unlike on other states, no funding was provided. We've moved incrementally as quickly as possible with just the resources that agencies have to redesign services and consolidate them, centralize them to be more efficient. We've achieved tens of millions of dollars of savings and cost avoidance for the state, particularly in renegotiating contracts. Prior to consolidation, agencies, you'd have 8, 9, 10 agencies with contracts with one vendor for the same service. We rolled those into an enterprise contract and greatly reduced the costs moving forward. We're very concerned that this is just going to move us back to the days of siloed, duplicative information technology. It's not just state governments. It's the private sector that's moving in this direction. When you think of things like cloud services, data analytics, You want to break down the barriers in your business areas and allow IT to be the power engine to make things more efficient and more effective. We recognize the frustrations. We share the frustrations related to the rollout of the Minlar system. I fear that this provision, and I know Commissioner Claiborne fears it as well, provides the appearance of some reform or solution to the IT challenges we face as a state. But I assure you that in reality, it simply moves us backwards in our efforts to become a more integrated, a more intelligent, and more effective state government. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Commissioner Mossman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Real briefly, and you know, we certainly would have commented earlier if I would have known these items were coming. Just to join my colleagues and in the opposition to the proposed minute consolidation language. I know Chair Rosen as well. You've put a lot of thought into this, and I just really want to reiterate that the challenge from our perspective is the need to fund IT investments and improvements. And the way I really would think about it and just leave you with this thought is had consolidation never happened, we would still have a non-existent to 20-year-old procurement system that is way out of date. Had centralization, which is the right thing to do and the course that the state needs to stay on, the legacy systems that are outdated and need to be funded and are failing and are causing cybersecurity risks would all still be outdated, unfunded, and causing cybersecurity risks. That was not what was intended or the solution that was going to come about simply by the centralization without actually funding the IT infrastructure needs. And then quickly, I would just also say on the contingent fee, I wanted to comment on that. We've put this in a letter, but the Department of Administration relies significantly on this contingent fee mechanism to put in place opportunities to collect subrogation claims on workers' compensation to the tune of about $2.5 million a year that benefits all of the taxpayers by making sure that that we are recouping appropriate amounts of money from other liable firms and companies, and that is a unique expertise in the attorney marketplace. And the strategy, most effective strategy to do that is through contingent fees, and so this would significantly undermine our ability to recuperate those workers' compensation subrogation claims. And so, you know, I guess if nothing else, I can't speak to the other issues that the Attorney General's office and others might have, but we would certainly request a carve-out on behalf of the Department of Administration if this language moves forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Mr. Carlson, welcome to the Supplemental Conference Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Joel Carlson, I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I know that I have the right to remain silent, but sometimes I lack the ability. I have to comment, Mr. Chair and members, briefly on Section 7 of the amendment and see this as a separate and distinct issue as it relates to contingent fee contracts and unrelated to the second part of the amendment in minute. You need to know that the state of Minnesota has on several occasions utilized the contingent fee to assert important legal rights on behalf of the citizens of the state. In many of these instances, the state does neither have the expertise nor are they willing to invest the time, energy, and effort in many of these important legal matters, whether it's tobacco, opioids, the 3M case. And to simply say that the chief legal officer no longer has the ability to make the proper decisions to represent the state, in addition to having separation of powers issues, I think really touches on the problem of whether or not you can hold people accountable. And that's what these contracts are really all about. Into the second half of that amendment on paragraph B, you need to understand that, well, the intention may be to allow attorneys like Commissioner Mossman talked about on the subrogation issue, allow attorneys to make third-party reimbursements to the state in injury cases. These are never subject to competitive biddings. What happens, for example, Senator Newman during his illustrious practice would represent a client. The client maybe had someone's medical care paid for by the state. When he makes a recovery, he has an arrangement with the Department of Human Services to reimburse the state and the taxpayers for those costs, and he gets paid for those services on a contingent basis. This would preclude that from happening. Additionally, false claims, as are referenced in this, are never handled under this fashion. A False Claim Act under 15C is a complaint generally brought by a whistleblower who already has legal counsel, who already has an arrangement with the client and the lawyer, who then bring that to the attorney general or the county attorney for prosecution. The way this is worded in paragraph B would completely frustrate the state's reimbursement for medical assistance and any of the false claims. So what you are really doing here unintentionally, despite whatever heartburn someone may have about the 3M case, is you're saying that the state can no longer prosecute or recover on these important legal rights. And that's why we have such concerns about this, Mr. Chairman and members. And I would appreciate if you would separate this out. I thought I'd get through a whole conference committee without having to appear. We made it to about 10 after 11 on the last day. I almost made it. But this one really is ill-conceived as it relates to protecting the taxpayers, and we hope you will give it consideration. And this was not heard in Senator Limmer's committee. This was a House-only proposal, and we have not had a chance to vet this properly, and we'd appreciate your indulgence. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Happy to answer questions.
Senator Benson?
It can't be the last day because my bill's not done yet.
All right. Well, Mr. Carlson, it's nice to see you again. All right. Any other discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
All right. We'll call for the vote. All in favor of the A-132 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion prevails. The A-132 amendment is adopted. Are there other amendments? Are there any other amendments you know of, Senator Rosen? No other amendments. All right. Did we adopt the spreadsheet? I don't think we did adopt the spreadsheet.
No, I don't think we did, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am going to be working off of the spreadsheet, the supplemental budget spreadsheet, dated 5/16/2018 at 11:13 a.m. And I'd like to move this spreadsheet, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen moves the spreadsheet, and I also assume moves that staff make any technical corrections necessary to make sure the spreadsheet conforms with the bill.
Thank you.
Any discussion to that motion? Seeing none, all in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The spreadsheet is adopted. And I think we are done with this bill. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry.
I think Ms. Roberts says we need to adopt something else.
Ms. Roberts?
Mr. Chair and members, the motions did not include adoption of pages 1 through on page 3, lines 3.25. So that would be the language for the appropriations. And it did.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that, Ms. Roberts?
You need to move to adopt all of page 1 through page 3, lines 3.25. That was not included in the previous motions. The appropriations article.
You're saying we did not adopt section 1?
One? Yeah.
Sections 1 through 5? I thought we had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did right here.
We didn't.
That was us.
Okay, well then.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Yes, I'd like to move the state government appropriations members on SGS 18-09, sections 1, 2, 3, 4, sections 5, 6, and 7 to page 3, line 25.
Senator Rosen moves the SGS 18-09 article, sections 1 through 7, page 1, line 1 through page 3, line 25. Discussion? See no discussion. All in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. The language is adopted. Is there anything else we have to do on the state government bill? Missed. Okay. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have one more article or one more committee we need to do, and that is Health and Human Services Committee, Senator Benson and Senator Abler, and Representative Dean and Representative Schumacher. And we will be meeting at the call of the chair, and we still have a little more work to do tomorrow, so that would be about all we have to do. This, we will be meeting in this room also, so just stand posted.
All right. Any other business to come before the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned to the call of the Senate chair.